Welcome, everyone. Just waiting for AGP on the video there. Okay, thank you. Welcome. Welcome to our regular City Council meeting. It's Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. We are located at the Veterans Memorial Hall. Welcome. And for the record, we do have a quorum. We'll call the meeting to order. We do have one absent council member, which we'll be discussing on consent. And also, if you'd all please join us and just take a moment of silence before we get started in the meeting. Thank you. Thank you. And next we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. If Chief Todd could lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you, Chief. Next on the agenda, we have closed session report. We have no reportable items for closed session. Moving on to council members and reports. To my left, Council Member Johnson, any reports or announcements?
No report, but yes, just a brief announcement. I'm supposing that two things, actually. Everyone probably got their little compost box the last week or two and delivered to our homes. So it's to your home compost, as you all probably know, and to be used voluntarily, so it's not something you must do, but hopefully the city is hoping that you choose to recycle your household waste with your, you know, there's many things you can put in there. There are complete directions, and if you have any questions, it's the garbage company, Morro Bay Garbage, that is, they're the ones that are facilitating this, so they're the ones that are the experts. So if you have questions, that's exactly where you'd want to go, but hopefully everyone is as excited as I was to receive it, and we'll be able to begin to use it soon. And then also, there are circulating around a survey from the Community Development Office about code enforcement. So we talked about code enforcement briefly a few months ago, and we said we would do a lot of outreach to understand exactly where the community's opinions are, and there will be a wide variety of opinions, we know that. So we've already started to circulate one survey asking you for your input. So if you're looking for that, I believe it came out in the utility bill, and it's also online various places. I found the link on the city's Facebook page. So if you have any questions, I'm sure Mr. Graham in Community Development or any one of us can get you connected so that you can also add your voice and your opinion on our code enforcement policies moving forward into the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Heading?
Just a quick reminder of the massive fires on both sides of us, and just ask that the community, in any way possible, support our fire forces that are there and doing the good works that they're doing to try to contain those fires. And so it looks like things are getting worse and better day by day. However, containment has not yet been achieved. So just ask that if in any way possible that you might support our fire people. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Smuckler, nothing? Okay, with that concludes our announcements for this portion of the agenda. Moving on to presentations, we have two presentations. We have a Maritime Discovery Month proclamation and a Chamber of Commerce quarterly presentation. We'll start off with the proclamation, and if we can just ask all of council, we're going to head down to the podium and present the proclamation, and we have the crew of our Maritime Museum folks here. So let's we'll meet you at the podium for Larry.
Come on down. Oh, Half the room got up.
All right.
That's a good sign.
So which? Okay. Okay, thanks for coming, everyone. Are we ready? Okay, all right. So this is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Moore Bay declaring October as Maritime Discovery Month. Whereas Moore Bay has evolved at the connection between land and ocean for countless centuries before recorded history, and whereas Native Americans plied the waters and shores of Moore Bay, and whereas Cabrillo's voyage of discovery in 1542 sailed by Moro Bay on the first European expedition up the California coast, and whereas, Gaspar de Portola Rivera, I don't know how I did on that one, in 1769 leading a land expedition in search of safe harbors noted Moro Rock, and whereas Moro Bay has been commercial fishing town for generations, and whereas Moro Bay facilitated valuable U.S. Navy training operations during World War II, and whereas Moro Bay's vital tourism economy now revolves around activities in and around the bay such as fishing, surfing, kayaking, and sailing, etc. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Moro Bay City Council does hereby proclaim the month of October every year as Maritime Discovery Month in the city of Moro Bay and urges the citizens of Moro Bay, California, to join the efforts to celebrate the maritime heritage of our city by the sea. And, Larry, this is a proclamation presented to you and your team, and I know you have a few minutes and a few words you'd like to say.
Okay.
Thank you.
You know, that's difficult for me.
I know. And I was going to stay right here to make sure we can do that.
I'm going to flip the switch.
All right, thank you.
Well, I'll try to be really brief. Seriously, it's hard to encapsulate 23 years of passion in 2 minutes. But thank you very much, Mayor and City Council, and you know, I was thinking about this driving in here tonight, that really this is sort of the representation and manifestation of a community coming together. And it's always been my contention that, Moro Bay always was and probably always will be a maritime village at the edge of the continent, a tiny little place with a big heart. And so we're just ecstatic about this. The San Salvador visit coming starting on the 29th. We'll kind of bookend this whole month. And this is the kickoff of our capital campaign for our Maritime Museum, which is on the overhead there, and there's a panel in the back. So we're just, there's a lot of people to thank, the waterfront community. I really want a big shout out to the Harbor Office and Eric and his folks and city management and a lot of the businesses down there, the Yacht Club, Moro Bay Yacht Club, the Moro Bay Historic Society, AGPA Video. There's too many people to name in the 2 or 3 minutes you've allowed me. Anyway, with that, I can't say more about the way people have just come together across all people, even people who are not interested in maritime stuff that much. It's about the sense of identity and presenting a compelling sense of place for our little place we call Moro Bay. So thank you very much. Should I take this one? I'll take this one. Take this one.
Okay, thanks everyone for that. Moving on, the second part of our presentation is Chamber of Commerce quarterly report. And we have Erica, I believe. Thank you. Erica Crawford. Welcome, Erica. Thank you.
Thank you. queued up. I'm going to stand this way. Oh, thank you. Okay. All right, well, my name is Erica Crawford. Thank you, Honorable City Staff, City Council, Mayor. We'll just go through a few slides here. The intention here is to just tell the story of what we're doing, who we are, where our resources are from, who we serve, and how we serve. So this is the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, and thought it would be a good place to start, our mission and purpose. These are foundational words that guide our actions. The essence is that we are working to bring the economic tide back into the harbor. The idea is that we're raising all the boats. That JFK quote, everyone benefits from a strong economy. This is the reason to shop local. Streets are paved, open spaces maintained, public services are strengthened when we are generating sales tax revenue in our city. So these are some of our major goals or values, which are creating a strong economy, promoting the community. I think really a focus of our mission is to help businesses thrive and to be a resource connection hub. So this is what we're working toward. So how do we do it? These are our revenue details. We worked through our budget the past few months. Our operating budget this year is projected at over just a little over $300,000. 37% of that is coming from member investment, looking at not just members, but member investors in our Chamber of Commerce. They are investing in our ability to get things done, things that they need. So the WACE is the Western Association of Chamber Executives. Their recommendation, or kind of a benchmark, is 40%. So we are not too far off the mark, which is exciting for us. 47% is coming from chamber programs like the Main Street Market, Avocado Margarita Festival. 16% is a city contract to run the visitor center. This is who we are. So I'm the CEO president. Bob Simeone has been our market manager for some time. He's doing a great job. Our revenues are coming up. He really is strengthening that market. Juliana Morris, I'm over the moon. She's moving very quickly into membership services. She's my executive assistant. She's got great experience. She's smart. She's a great writer. Jenny Gosnell just got a design award for the state of California for her graphic design. So our things are looking really great. And we've got our three dedicated visitor center staff. My volunteer philosophy really is open door. I want people to bring to the table what they want to bring and what they feel confident in bringing. So our chamber board of directors are community leaders, business leaders. They are dedicated. They put in hundreds of hours a year in making sure not just that our organization is, you know, there, but that it's thriving and that it's growing and that it's accomplishing things. Our chamber volunteers are also our chamber ambassadors. So we have a core group of about 8 people. I'm having a lunch on Friday. If anybody's interested, I'm cooking at 695 Harbor Street to really talk about where the program is and where we'd like to take it, and to take a look at what's around the table. But just in the last quarter, this is quarter two presentation, we did have our volunteers hand-deliver some new membership packages and some renewals, so that's kind of increasing that face of the chamber out into the business community, greeting new members, coming to all of our events. Membership statistics. So we are at present 230 active members, including 41 nonprofit organizations. That's representing a little over 3,600 employees in Morro Bay. This we are poised for the calendar year to be 32% growth over last year. Just as an example of that, since January we've added 31 new members. That's versus 37 total new members added in 2015. Our tenure is pretty lengthy, 10 years. People are bought in, people are invested. We have 100 members who are over 10 years, and our longest member is at 31 years, and that's Nick over at Lolo's Mexican Restaurant. We do recognize in the quarter two, it was businesses of the month. Moving forward, we're doing a business spotlight each month and highlighting one business per quarter. So April was Sunshine Health Foods. They're doing such a great job. They have 4 storefronts downtown. Hay Printing, Tom Hay, does so much for the community. He's my go-to printer. The Galley Seafood and Grill, we were really excited about farm-to-table food. You know, we're in formation stages for that Taste of the Grove event. We have that right in our backyard. It is amazing food. So we were highlighting him then. Where do people find us? We're at 695 Harbor Street, but we're also on the internet. So we've got a website that's seeing some pretty great traffic, 11,000 average month visits, page views, at over 45,000 page views. Our weekly e-blast, 5,200 reads, and that's all of quarter two. That is looking a lot better, thanks to Jenny. So we are seeing our opening rates kind of peak up a little bit higher than 32%. We have Instagram as of today, so I'm very excited about that. We've already got some followers, and we're all over that, and our Facebook page is up to 4,600 likes. This is moving into some of that revenue, and it ties into our goals and our purpose to promote the local economy. The way I see it, we generated $90,000 in gross sales for an average of 39 vendors per market. We are out there every Saturday in the downtown inviting people to come out to spend money in our downtown, to go over and Top Dog, grab a coffee, check out Coalesce, and to also cruise our market and support these vendors. An average day for a vendor in gross sales is $227. This is not revenue stream. This is return on investment. So these are our chamber programs. We, in the second quarter, did two mixers. We had a turnout of over 60 business people come to the art center at downtown Morro Bay. Super fun. We did two ribbon cutting ceremonies. We did our first business walk survey to date in Morro Bay, and only the second in Slo County. First was Atascadero, as Mayor Irons knows. Our business forum focused on the results of that business walk. We also helped with the Amgen bicycle race, which seems like years ago, but was just yesterday, and happened in quarter two. Looking forward, so this again connects to our mission. We are bringing a burgeoning partnership with the SBDC to Morro Bay. So we have this Help Customers Find You, Putting Your Business on the Map with Google and Yelp. It's a free workshop on Wednesday, the 21st of September, down at Windows on the Water. I wanted to definitely recognize Jean Heath. She is doing a lot for our business community, inviting people in to do employment loss workshops, negotiating commercial lease workshops. I also like to recognize Jennifer Little for her efforts with the Morro Bay Merchants Association. She did a Facebook workshop, so education is trending in Morro Bay, which is great for our business community. Promoting local flavors. So the Avocado Margarita Festival is fast approaching. It's on Saturday, September 10th. It is one day. We are looking toward a great and safe success. So we have increased our security budget a whopping 190%. The idea there is that we have a larger festival footprint. We're doing softer fencing so it doesn't look so hard and unwelcoming. So kind of investing in that more human touch. We've increased our promotion 66% over last year, and we have Uber at the event. So there's an Uber booth. If people need to take an Uber home, it's going to be there for them. Forever Stoked is doing a community-created art mural, which we're really excited about. It's cool. And then Cornhole, Jenga, street performers, vendors, all of this. If anybody has questions about parking restrictions and road closures and things like that, we have an FAQ page on our website. And this is new this year. All Morro Bay businesses are invited to decorate. And I have a bunch of sombreros at the office. So you can do a business sombrero, pop that on, and come on in and not pay an entrance fee and promote your business at the event. We'll parade all the business sombreros up at 3:30 p.m. on the stage that day. Thank you, City of Morro Bay, and thank you to the TBID for event grant in support of our inaugural Taste of the Grove event. Believe it or not, we are sold out. Isn't that great? So we've sold out of that event. It's our first year. We are over the moon. It's over 30 vendors. It's wonderful food. In it, Morro Bay is our local representation, among others, MCB Wine, Libertine, Artisan. I mean, we're adding more. So it's going to be really a night to remember. And we have shuttle service again, just to keep that a safe event. I look forward to checking in with hotels to see about those overnight stays. Economic impact, we're estimating at $1.1 million for the Avocado Margarita Festival, if we're looking at 60% of our attendees coming from out of town. That number for attendees this year may be a little bit different because it is a one-day festival, but we're going to watch that. And then Visitor Center. You know, we do run the Visitor Center. The guys are doing a great job. We just did another in-service training, which is why I highlighted trained. We had a revisit on the way that our website, morrobay.org, works. And so we're all very clear on the fact that everything that's showing up on that website indicates that that room is available for that night. Our Visitor Center staff knows that, and they are kind of advocating and helping people navigate our town. So we saw 1,914 visitors in person. We fielded 331 phone calls. This is just quarter two. The top three requests were activities, retail, and dining. And that's all I have. If anybody has any questions for today.
Thanks for the presentation, Erica. Sure, any questions from council? No questions? No questions?
Okay,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay.
And that comments from? Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I really just, no questions. Erica, your presentation was very thorough and informative, and it lets us know exactly how the organization is doing for the community. But I do want to say it is a breath of fresh air to see this much activity and positive collaboration happening with the Chamber. And I think all along the council for the last several years has really been rooting for the chamber to come together and coalesce, and it seems like it's really happening, and I just want to recognize your leadership is, from what I can see, a great deal to do with that, and your board too. So thanks a lot for especially collaboration with business communities, because I think in the old days people would think, oh, you know, what's the chamber do for me? But I think you've really made it real. And then you're educating those of us who don't own businesses that it really is vital that we shop at our small local businesses, which make up the vast majority of our community. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Councilmember Johnson. Anybody else for comments? That said it all. Thank you. And with that, we have a moving on to public comment speaker slip. So in case there's speaker slips in the back for those who'd like to speak for public comment on any item on the agenda and any item that's later on the agenda that you might not be able to stay for and you want to speak at regular public comment, please do so. But I have a list of speaker slips for public comment. And usually with our public comment, we start it off with a business spot. And Joe Pettit from Fitness Works will lead us off in public comment. So come on up, Joe, and open us up for public comment.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. My name is Joe Pettit. I'm with Fitness Works. I'm the membership director. This will be the comic relief portion of the show, probably at my expense. So I'm hoping I do a good job. If not, just laugh along anyway. Again, my name is Joe Pettit. I'm the membership director at Fitness Works on Quintana Road, as most of you know. When I found out I only had 3 minutes to do a presentation, and I'm a salesman, that's kind of rough, so I thought I'd jot down my thoughts just to keep me on task here. And I figured why not put it in the form of a poem. So here you go. I'm honored to stand before the City Council of Morro Bay, where folks from far and wide come to work and live and play. They come to see the beauty of our shores and sand and sea, to marvel at Morro Rock in all its majesty. The recreation can't be beat. There's so much you can do. Hiking, golf, and surfing, just to name a few. To recreate the right way, you must be fit, they say. That's why you need to join Fitness Works of Morro Bay. All right. Group fitness classes are included in your membership fee. Yoga, Pilates, and Zumba. We even have Tai Chi. Okay, that was a weak attempt, but Tai Chi, but there you go. Our extensive strength equipment gets you ripped with a six-pack gut. You'll have to buy some Band-Aids because you'll be all cut up. All right. We've got Kid Works for the little ones. We'll watch them while you train so you can get your sweat on and keep from going insane. I'm proud to announce our 13th anniversary as I end this fitness story, because Fitness Works in Morro Bay were here long before Finding Dory. All right. Courtesy clap, I appreciate that. So Fitness Works is celebrating our 13th anniversary, as the flyer you can see on display there shows. We'll be having celebration events going on from September 13th through October 1st. We're going to have fitness contests. We're going to have a group fitness challenge. We're going to have breast cancer awareness themes going on. It's all going to culminate on October 1st on a Saturday, where we're going to have raffle prizes. And so come on out and get involved. We're also going to have a membership special for 1 and 2 year new members that get their first month for only $13. I also just wanted to switch out the slide or video there. That's just our group fitness schedule. So you can see we have quite a variety of group classes, over 55 classes offered per week. And we also have trial memberships available for any locals that want to come by. We have day passes. We can do a 1 week complimentary trial visit for someone who's never seen our gym before. We have a 30-day trial membership for $30. That's another option. And also just wanted to let everyone know that city employees also have special corporate discount rates. So come and see me. I've given Jan some complimentary trial passes. So anyone that wants to pick one of those up from Jan at the end of the event, if I'm not around, go ahead and do that. Good timing. Thank you.
All right, Joe. Thank you. Thanks for starting us up. Okay. With that, we'll open up public comment. And first up is Betty Winholtz, followed by Gary Wilbur.
Thank you. I'm going to speak to item C4, your last item on the agenda, because I won't be here that late. For me, this item, which is about the roundabout and doing the environmental study for it, is the perfect example of why I'm running for mayor. The way that this was handled, that a year or so ago when it came up, we were told that we would have public input and that would be made visible and we would get to see all the things that are going on. I do know it's been before Public Works. Public Works met during the summer when most people aren't around. The last time it met was back in October of 2015. So I don't know how, if at all, it's changed since then till now. What is in your staff report is really the contract. It's not about the discussion. It's not about getting a letter from the principal at the Morro Bay High School saying what his pros and cons are, though the letter does say he's strongly in favor of it. But words, what's missing for me is the documentation. You know, who has said what? Where have you engaged the public? Because the public doesn't always pay attention to your advisory boards. And I think the fact that it's never been discussed here at prime time is a major disadvantage to the public to even know that it's going forward, because that is something that we 10 or 13 years ago said we did not want. And so here it is back again. So I'm finding the way that this has been brought about as not being resident friendly, and I will still retain my objection to it for this reason. Back when we did the roundabout at Quintana and Morro Bay Boulevard, according to federal standards, you don't put roundabouts where there's a high pedestrian population. That intersection has the highest pedestrian population at 12:30, 5 days a week, when the kids come over to go to Taco Bell and the other places to eat. My fear, and I'm acknowledging that it's a fear, and maybe your study is going to take care of that, is that the same thing that's going to happen here is what happened at how we got the light out at Yerba Buena, that it took the death of a child to get Caltrans and the city to come together and put that light in. I don't want to see the death of a teenager at a roundabout at 41 and 1. So I'm hoping that there's something that we can look at, because I didn't see it. I'm hoping that there's some kind of engineering or an overpass or something that's going to protect these kids. My second concern about a roundabout at this location is the RVs coming in on Friday and Thursday afternoons and the high school coming out. And I can't imagine 16-year-olds and people pulling trucks with RVs meeting at that intersection, that's going to make it any more a higher rating than what it is right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Gary Wilbur, followed by Don Doubledy. And if you're in favor of some of the speakers, if you'd wave, please, so we can be respectful and keep our comments going. Gary Wilbur.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I appreciate the opportunity to address you on a matter that has come up. My concern is sober living facilities operating as boarding houses. These facilities violate several municipal codes, and probably many of them violate building codes as well. Recently, there was an attempt to establish such a facility in my neighborhood. I would like to thank Scott Graham and David Crockett of the Planning Board for their prompt, decisive, and professional response to the matter. It was rewarding. I want to be very clear that neither I nor many of the people I have spoken with in my neighborhood are not opposed to facilities that offer aid, support, and treatment, housing, to recovering substance abuse people. Many of us feel it is our civic duty and obligation to do so. However, we also feel these facilities must have proper accreditation, bona fide treatment plans, and staffed with properly credentialed professionals to develop, administer treatment plans. Also, all municipal building and zoning codes must be complied with. There have been and may still be such facilities operating in Morro Bay. Absent strict enforcement and supervision of these facilities, if they exist, have the potential for exploitation of people who, for various reasons, have become dependent on drugs and alcohol, or alcohol. I ask the council to review this matter and take appropriate action as needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Don Doubledy, followed by Janice House.
Hi, Mr. Mayor, Council. I'm Don Doubledy. I'm from the Harbor Festival, and I'm here to remind everybody that we're kicking off October, the Maritime Month, with the Harbor Festival. October 1st, Saturday. We'll be starting about 11 a.m. and run until 8 p.m. We have free admission this year, and we're between Harbor Street and Marina on the Embarcadero. We will have two stages this year. The main stage will have all local entertainment. The second stage, the starboard stage, will be all family and children-oriented entertainment, including things such as the Bucket Busters, Commotion, Pirates for Hire, a lot of fun entertainment for family. We will also be featuring the Morro Bay fishing industry. The Morro Bay Fishermen's Association will be at One Street End. The South Bay Fishermen's Association will be at a second, and Central Coast Women for Fisheries will be at the third, all serving up fresh-cooked local catch. So you can't beat that. We will be running the trolley all around town. It'll be running back and forth between the festival and the San Salvador, and, of course, the farmers market will be going on. All vendors will be local vendors. They're all Morro Bay businesses only. We have no out-of-town vendors. So this is all about our city. It's all about our businesses. It's all about our local industry. And you'll be seeing much more information coming up in the next couple of weeks on radio, television, newspaper, et cetera. Thank you very much for a grant from the Tourism Bureau, which is helping to support that. Don't forget, Saturday, October 1st, from 8 to 11, I'm sorry, from 11 to 8, please come on down. It's free. Enjoy yourselves, and welcome to it.
Thank you, Don. Janice House, anybody else for a public comment? Welcome.
Janice House, Morro Bay. I have some questions and some concerns about the process that is being used for the recruitment of some of your management positions. To be specific, your finance director, which is a brand new job, it was posted on the website and closed June 17th, and there was no minimum qualifications on the flyer the potential applicant saw. In tonight's packet, there's a job description for that job. It has minimum qualifications of education, years of experience, all appropriate qualifications. The status is that recruitment's complete and you're about to hire someone. The normal process is to have a job description at the beginning of the process. The job description drives the flyer. It drives the evaluation of the applicants. It's used by the people on the committee. So my question is, if you have minimum requirements for the job, minimum qualifications for the job, how did the potential applicants know that they met it so it was worth their time to apply for the job? Or is the job description being written to match the person that you want to hire? And quite frankly, given the timing of this, I think it'd be hard for you to defend that that isn't what's going on. For the tourism manager, that also is a new job. Again, on the flyer that was posted for potential applicants to see, there was no specific minimum qualifications. In the packet tonight, there's a job description. It has some specific qualifications of years of experience and some degrees in higher education. This person is already on staff. So again, how were potential applicants to know what the minimum qualifications were to know if it was worth their time to apply for the position, or is the job being written to match the person that you hired? The deputy city manager, that again is being flown, and there's no minimum qualifications on the flyer for people to see. Now, you do have a job description, because a year ago when you hired Sam Taylor, you approved a job description after he was identified as the person you wanted to hire. So again, and the recruitment is completed, and you're going to hire in the next few weeks. So again, how are people supposed to know that they meet the minimum qualification before they apply for the job? Are you going to keep this job description, or once you identify the person you want to hire, are you going to modify it so it matches their qualifications? This just seems like a backwards process and kind of troubling. I have similar concerns about the police commander job, the budget accounting manager that is also a new job, and the recreation services division coordinator that's a new job. And if anyone, I have it all on a little spreadsheet here. If anyone wants the details, I'll be glad to send it to you.
Thank you, Janice. And Janice, you've got our email. If you want to send it, that would be great. I'd love to have it. Red Davis for was this public comment, Red? You have Morbay Police Department for consent, or is this public comment?
Public comment.
Public comment, okay. And then there's Walter Heath for support announcement. Okay, public comment. Good.
I just wanted to say thank you to the police department and particularly to the officer who investigated the open door on Greenwood yesterday. That's a high standard of the protection and service that our police department gives to all of us in our community. So thank you.
Thanks, Red. Walter Heath. And that concludes public comment for items not on the agenda.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Walter Heath, resident of Morro Bay. I'm just here tonight to remind everyone that as part of Maritime Discovery Month, the Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival will be taking place in its third year. This year, it's a 60-day exhibit from October 1st until December 1st with an art sale on December 3rd. And we're looking forward to some beautiful pieces. We're getting some great coverage in the media. The map of the locations where the surfboard art pieces will be located will be available at the Visitor Center on October 1st, and hopefully a little bit before that. And it'll also be downloadable from the Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival website, which is MB, as in Bravo, SAF.com, so the initials of Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival, MBSAF.com. You'll be able to download that exhibit map and see some of the stories behind the pieces and the artists who create them. Thanks.
Thank you, Walter. And we have one more speaker slip for C4. Can you not stay for that, Marlis? Is that okay? Thank you. I'm looking at the agenda item C4. I just want to make sure I'm got you right. Thank you. Welcome.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Marlis McPherson. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'd like to speak to item C4, which is the contract, the engineering services contract for State Routes 141 and Main Street. I'm also the chair of the Public Works Advisory Board, and I just wanted to report that we have looked at this issue several times and met last week to actually look at the contract. And we had a lengthy discussion about it, and we did vote unanimously to recommend that the council approve this contract. But we also made sure that in the contract, the two alternatives that are looked at are the roundabout and signals. So there are two alternatives that will be evaluated in this engineering phase. I also wanted to mention that, and it was not in the staff report, that we had a lengthy discussion about getting public input. We were very, very concerned that we needed early and vigorous outreach to the public to really let them know about this project and to give them an opportunity in this early phase to comment on it. We did hear that the high school had looked at it and they preferred the roundabout solution, but we want to make sure that all of the affected people, including parents of high school students, have an opportunity to look at it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Marlis. I don't have any more speaker slips for public comment. So with that, I'll conclude public comment, and we'll bring it back to council. And we have a couple items to respond to. Item C4 we can probably respond to now, but it's also an item we're going to be in discussion. So I'll look to our city manager whether or not we want to get into full discussion on that item or if we want to respond to some of those when we open that up for discussion. And we have the people that are present that made those comments. It might be worth responding to those now.
Great. So I'll ask Rob just to respond briefly to C4 now, since we're going to discuss it at length later, and then we'll respond to two other comments.
Okay, thanks.
C4 is the contract to award for the first phase of preliminary design and environmental review for the intersection improvements at Main 41 and Highway 1. Caltrans will be the lead agency on this project. It is entirely within their right-of-way. We have met several times over the past few years, or year or so, and I'm looking for the slide from the presentation later that has those dates. September 15th, we did a stakeholder outreach with Morro Bay High School to talk with the principal and the facilities representative. They are very much looking forward to improvements to that intersection. They think the roundabout is the best solution. They did have concerns about their student population not using the appropriate pedestrian facilities, but perhaps cutting across the center of it, and wanted to make sure in the design that there was facilities to prevent that. We brought a briefing to the Public Works Advisory Board October 21st, 15, June 15th, July 20th, and August 16th of 2016. SLOCOG public hearings, in November and December of 15, and briefings to City Council as far back as January 24th, 2012, November 8th, 2015, at the January 12th goal setting session, and during the May and June budget adoptions, we discussed those intersection improvements. I think we'll wait until C4 to get into most of the details on the item, but just wanted to bring up some of the key dates that we have met with the public.
Great, Rob. Thank you for responding to that. And then we have a couple other responses. Mr. Buckingham?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask Scott Graham to respond real briefly to, I didn't catch his last name, Gary's comments about the sober living facility.
Yeah, that'd be
and
great.
If you just address how our existing codes and ordinances essentially protect us from that concern.
Yeah, we do have policies that do allow for the setup of these types of facilities in residential neighborhoods, and specifically we're talking transitional and supportive housing types, and those are definitions that we have that are adopted in our municipal code. So there are certain definitions that go along with those, and we can have those types of facilities in our residential zones. Typically those are facilities that would be registered with the state of California. When you get into situations where folks just want to set up something like this on their own, well, then we have to default to the municipal code or the zoning code and to determine what's acceptable for rental of rooms to individuals. And when you start getting multiple folks occupying rooms, you start getting into a definition that would be a boarding house underneath our zoning code. And boarding houses aren't allowed in R1 or R2 zones. They were only allowed through the conditional use permit process in our multifamily zones and commercial zones in town. So those types of situations would not be acceptable in most residential neighborhoods.
Great. Scott, thanks for that.
And I'll just briefly respond to Ms. House's concerns. So there were a number of things noted there. For example, for the finance director position, the job description was written and published before the recruitment start. It was available on the website. It was not in the brochure, but it was available for reference through the website. And with all of these these job descriptions. We're bringing them to the council now for the council to approve those job descriptions, because that's what the municipal code says we're supposed to do, and there's been a number that haven't been approved over the years. So, but for every one of these recruitments, there was a job description that was written before the recruitment and used as part of the recruitment.
Okay, great. Any questions from council? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and move on to consent. And with consent, we've got 12 items on consent. I will open it up for public comment at this time, and I think we've got quite a few for public comment. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. We've got seven for public comment. Looks like we've got quite a bit of action on A12. But we'll open up for the first speaker, Dana McClish, for item A4, followed by Gannon Campbell. Welcome, Dana.
Good evening. Dana McClish, Morro Bay resident. Yeah, I just have an announcement regarding the arrival of the San Salvador. You spoke about it in the proclamation regarding the Maritime Heritage Month in October. This will be coming in on the 29th in the afternoon, and I'm working with the Maritime Museum here in Morro Bay, and we're coordinating a sail out, a welcoming flotilla, as you would call it. So we're asking anybody who has a boat or anybody who knows somebody who has a boat wants to go on it to get them to come on out. It's open to everybody. We're hoping to have working vessels, big power boats, commercial fishing boats, sport fishing boats, of course sailboats and kayaks and paddle boards too, to come out and greet. As the bigger boats can meet them out in the ocean and the smaller boats can be on the inside. We're looking at the Selenian tribe being involved with a Thule canoe to greet them on the inside also. And so this is going to be kind of a big event for the whole boating community in Morro Bay to come out and be a part of this. And it's the kickoff for the month, you know, right before and with the Harbor Fest. And one thing I wanted to add to the Harbor Fest, there will be a race. It's hosted by the Morro Bay Yacht Club on that day. That's Saturday, October 1st, and it is it's called the Harbor Fest Cup. So I just wanted to add that. And one more thing I just wanted to say to Matt, I hope his eyes get better.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dana. Next is Gannon Campbell. Welcome, Gannon. And friends, make sure that mic is down where we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay. So today we're here about the maybe getting a new skate park in Morro Bay. And there are some reasons that we are looking to do this is because the one we have isn't the best, and it'd be nice to get a better one for all the skaters in Morro Bay. And so we had a DIY before, and that was just from some kids' allowances and recycling and stuff. And that brought pros in and kids from around the county. So I think that we put our time into the DIY and made something happen. And I think that shows that we could make a skate park that would benefit the community by bringing more customers into the town, and and it'd be something that the kids around town could do, and if it has a street course or something, that it would keep us off the roads and stuff. So thank you.
All right, you guys, thank you. You guys are awesome. Next is Lori Larian for item A4. And then Jason Linker after that.
Thank you. My name's Lori Larian. I'm with Arts Obispo. I'm the program director, and we are the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council. And one of our programs is the Open Studios Art Tour that is coming up this year, October 8th and 9th and 15th and 16th. And it's a program where visual artists open their studios and demonstrate their process and showcase their art. And this year we have five artists in Morro Bay, and we are honored to be part of the Discovery Month. And thank you for the proclamation.
Thank you, Lori. Next, Jason Linker, and followed Steve Campbell following Jason. Welcome, Jason.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Jason Linker. I've been a resident here in Morro Bay my entire life. I've also been a skateboarder myself since the third grade. I was asked to speak on behalf of Jack Smith, who cannot be here tonight. Many of you know Jack, excuse me, personally, but for those of you who don't, I can't think of a better advocate for the sport and lifestyle of skateboarding. Jack is the owner and curator of the Morro Bay Skate Museum right here on our own Embarcadero. If you haven't had the chance to see this impressive museum and meet Jack himself, I highly recommend you do. It will most certainly give you insight to the life-changing sport from as far back as the 1930s to the present day. Now a short message from Jack. Hello, Mayor, City Council members, city staff, and citizens of Morro Bay. Although I cannot attend tonight's City Council meeting, I want to express my support for the possibility of a vastly improved skate park, or possibly a new skate park altogether, becoming an official goal of the City of Morro Bay. Morro Bay has a long and impressive history in the skateboarding world, beginning with a city-sponsored skateboard contest in 1976, which I actually attended, and national-level slalom races on Harbor Street in 1981 and on Kennedy Way in 1991. There was even a ditch riding contest held in the late 1980s in the drainage culvert across from Cookie Crock Market, or for the old-timers out there, Williams Brothers and Thrifties. In the early 2000s, Morro Bay was host to five World Slalom Skateboarding Championships held on Main Street and Pacific Street. Each of these races attracted over 100 racers from 15 countries, filling hotels in the coffers of local restaurants and business. Morro Bay has also produced two World Slalom Skateboarding Champions, Paul Dunn and Gary Fluitt. The 7th Annual Morro Bay Mile Skateboard Race was held this past July 4th. A few years back, Councilwoman Nancy Johnson, after noticing that many young and some not so young people were using their skateboards as transportation, led the effort to change the Morro Bay Ordinance that restricted skateboard riding in Morro Bay. When I tell visitors to the Morro Bay Skate Museum that our city council changed the law to support skateboarding as transportation, they are truly amazed. The time has come for Morro Bay, a city with such a storied skateboarding history, to upgrade its current skate park or perhaps even build a new skate park. Skateboarding is no longer considered solely a kid's activity. Just pay a visit to the beautiful new San Luis Obispo Skate Park or the Los Osos Skate Park, and you'll see skaters of both genders from 5 to over 60 years old enjoying themselves. Both the SLO and Los Osos parks also attract families throughout the state, nation, and world to their respective cities. The current Morro Bay Skate Park has been limping along for years, with above-ground features and obstacles that are very limited to the skaters of today. Recently, a group of skaters banded together in an effort to improve our current park by adding new terrain. Unfortunately, due to liability concerns, these features were removed. I think now is the time for the city to join with these new young skaters, their families, and other interested parties to create a skate park that Morro Bay can be proud of, as well as meet the needs of local skaters. Thank you. Jack Smith.
Thanks, Jason, for reading that. Steve Campbell is next, and then Ken Twist.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to be here. I'm going to start off my presentation. I just recently learned that we have the champion of the ditch surfing or skating competition in our midst. Chris Bath is in our audience today, son of Jack Bath, who was earlier up presenting. So, you know, we have a deity in our midst. I just want to be real quick and just say I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm excited to have this item considered to be a goal of the city. I think everybody pretty much knows the story, but behind the youth center, the boys had built some do-it-yourself things due to liability concerns and those things like Jason explained in Jack's letter. It had to be demoed. We understand that. I think the boys did a great job of taking a positive spin on that and trying to say, okay, that's we understand where we are now, but what could we possibly work forward on that together? We do think that it'd be good for the community, it'd be good for the kids. It would help get the kids out, kind of sometimes out of the way of pedestrians and out of traffic and things like that, where kids will skate if there's not a facility. I think it would also bring people into the community. I think the kids are also, as we are, we're realistic about the time frame and realize that there's a long road to hoe, but we're willing to do that with you guys and hope that it is approved as a city goal that we can begin working on it together. So, thank you.
Great, Steve. Thank you. Ken Twist and then Jane Heath.
Mayor, City Council, and staff. I don't know what else we can say that would drive home the point that Jack made so elegantly in his letter. You have a lot of history here. We have our own deity right back there and his offspring and kids. This would be a tremendous benefit to the city. The presentation earlier by the chamber discussing, you know, who comes into the, I guess that's the welcoming center. 33% are looking for activities, what to do here in Morro Bay. So outside of fish and chips and restaurants and things like that, having healthy and active lifestyle, this would be a tremendous benefit because people do travel around and look for things like skate parks and bike parks and surfing. So it becomes a family event. And while the parents are here in town enjoying what we have to offer, kids may not always want to be in tow. So this is another great opportunity to enhance the family experience by having something to take the kids to do that's safe and that encourages, you know, group being out in groups and being outdoors. So I'm for it. I look forward to working with the city, and that's all I have. Thanks.
Ken, thank you. Jane Heath and then Mike Sherrod.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I'm very pleased to be here. My name's Jane Heath. I'm a Morro Bay resident and business owner, but today I'm literally wearing my other hat, which is as a board member of the Maritime Museum Association. I want to thank the Mayor and the City Council for the proclamation naming October Maritime Discovery Month. It's an exciting time for the Maritime Museum of Morro Bay. We've been here before. We've talked about all of the exciting things we have going on. And we're especially excited about the visit of the San Salvador reproduction of Juan Cabrillo's flagship, which will be here to kick off our Maritime Discovery Month. I'm here, though, to especially recognize our partners in this effort. The board of the Morro Bay Maritime Museum, Larry and Janet Newland, Jack Hunter, Bob and Judy Salamaca, Judy Ann and Terry Cross, Keith Kelsey, Bob McKay, Sean Harris, Walter Heath, and myself comprise the entire board of the Morro Bay Maritime Association. So there's a lot of work, and folks are working really hard. But, you know, it takes a village to build a maritime museum. And we are lucky to have a village and to have one with a lot of diverse talent. And we want to recognize our partners in the effort to build our maritime museum. They include the Historical Society of Morro Bay, the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, the Salinan Tribe, the Avila Bay Yacht Club, the Morro Bay Yacht Club, the Harbor Festival, the Harbor Department, the City of San Luis Obispo, in particular City Manager Mr. Buckingham, and the Tourism Department Jennifer Little. AGP Video, Morro Bay in Bloom Surfboard Art Festival, the Morro Bay Library, the San Luis Obispo PTA, the Arts Obispo Mental Marketing, Tolosa Press, Morro Bay Life, Estero Bay Community Foundation, Morro Bay National Estuary Program, Len Gentoo and the Papagallo, Central Coast Women for Fisheries, Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Association, St. Timothy's Church, and there are undoubtedly others that we've left off, too many to count or list, but you can count on it that during Maritime Discovery Month, we're going to have something for everyone. If you wish to volunteer for many activities, please, please, please go to our website, which is on the slide right now, www.morrobaymaritime.org. There is a sign-up sheet there, and Walter Heath will be very happy to have you. I also have calendars of events that I'm going to leave at the back for anybody who's here. You can get them also by contacting us through our site, and we'd like to see you out at all of the events celebrating Maritime Discovery Month. I'll be here in 2 weeks to spend a little more time talking about our major capital campaign to build our first building, which is the 1542 Navigator Circle. We are inviting a very select, very small number of Morro Bay citizens and friends to join as founders of the Maritime Museum, and they will have a panoply of benefits that are be available for an investment of $1,542, and with the right number of people, we will build our museum next summer. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Next is Mike Sherrod. Welcome, Mike.
Mr. Mayor, council members, good evening. First, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank my fellow neighbors and friends and residents and skaters and parents of skaters who have consistently encouraged city leaders to build a top-notch skate park in our town. I also want to commend this council for really listening to folks and electing to add improving the skate park to the city's goals and objectives for this fiscal year. You know, I've been involved in a variety of ways in helping develop the signature skate park for our community for a long time. In fact, our son was 5 years old when we attended the first design workshop, and he's now starting his first year of college. So approval of this consent item tonight will certainly put the hope we all share for a better skate park on a solid path to become reality. Thanks for your time.
Mike, thank you. And with that, that'll conclude our public comment for consent. I think that's the most speakers we've had for consent ever. And it's very welcomed. Enjoyed it. And with that, we'll close public comment, and we'll move on to consent agenda for council. I'll just start off by pulling item A12. And I just wanted to make comments on items A9, A10, and A11, and those are the employee contract agreements. I just wanted to thank the employees and our staff for working so diligently and getting those signed and through us and on the consent today. So I know there's a lot of work effort in that. I just want to say thanks for that. Other than that, A12 was the only one I was going to pull. Are there any other items to pull? A5, A6. And then I take a motion to approve all items on consent with the exception of item A5, A6, and A12.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Johnson, second by Councilmember Heading. Any further discussion?
I'm sure we would all agree with your comments on employee negotiations and appreciate everybody negotiating in good faith and doing the best they can, given the reality of who we are in the city of Morro Bay, but certainly appreciate all the effort on staff side, effort on negotiator side, and especially effort on employee side. If, gentlemen, you'd like to add anything?
Okay.
Ditto.
All right, good. So with that, we have a motion on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. That's items, all items except for A5, A6. So item A5, Councilmember Heading.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for that. I did speak to Eric earlier today, our harbor director, and I'm specifically calling out this item because of what is a national issue right now, and that is the abuse of prescription drugs, especially opiate narcotics, as well as tainted street drugs. In both of these contracts, and in fact, a majority of the state contracts, there is a section on page 19 of 32 of A5, you will see that requirement of a drug-free workplace. And to me, this is one of the important components as a city that employs a large number of people, that we are compliant with this. This is one of those educational opportunities to educate adults who may have missed that education that is going on now in our public schools about the ills of inappropriate use of medications and drug abuse in general. And so in speaking earlier with Eric and not knowing completely if we had a full-blown program that met and complied with this, I just wanted to make sure that I called it out and that to let you know that Eric assured me that we would be compliant with this if we didn't have a full program. And I just wanted to say that I think it's of paramount importance that this city, as an employer, has that program throughout all the departments of the city. So thank you for that. And I don't know if Eric wants to respond or Mr. Buckingham.
Yeah, I'll just note quickly that we do have a drug-free workplace policy, and that policy is being updated as part of the update, the ongoing update of our administrative policies for the city. And those are the review has been complete, and they are now either with the attorney or with the groups for their review. Yeah, so our attorneys have completed the review, and they're with the bargaining units for their review of the updated management policies. So there is one in place, and it will be updated forthwith.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Any further comments? Seeing none, I take a motion to approve item A5.
So moved.
We have a motion. And a motion by Dr. Heading, second by Councilmember Smuckler. Any further discussion? None. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. And moving on to item A6.
Same comment, same language, same contract. Ditto.
Okay. So I guess that would mean we'd take a motion to approve item A6. We have a motion and a second. Motion by Councilmember Heading, second by Councilmember Smuckler. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. And then on to item A12. I just want to make a couple comments on this one. Thanks for all the support and turnout for this one. I just want to say I do support the updated recommendations to add this to our goals. And as far as item A12 covers a slew of different things, so I'm just going to speak to those. One of them is the skate park. We have one, and I just want to thank Chief Todd for working with our police volunteers for updating the program there in that organization. So we've got a change in our goals as far as the neighborhood watch program, but more of a police volunteers program that we're going to be taking on with our goals. So I just want to recognize that. And then, getting to the skate park, wanted to recognize the young kids that came out and your parents for your supporting you. You guys did a great job. You came out over a month ago and took responsibility for the DYI skate park that was built, but recognizing that it couldn't stay. And basically the approach was, hey, we understand that, and we want to do what we can and work with the city to build a new one. So I think that in of itself was a great example for all of us to consider when we think about how we work as a city, as a community, and through city council, government, and all that. So I just wanted to recognize you guys for doing such a great job, all of you. So thanks for that. As far as this had, and one of the reasons to bring this forward now, other than having great support from parents and the kids, that this was out there years ago, and great for Mike Sherrod to come out and remind us that there's a community workshop and some conceptual programs or skate parks designs out there. So for whatever reason, it was out there once before, kind of lingered around, fell off the radar screen, and so I think it would be appropriate to put it on there. But I have some comments on that as well. Part of the recommendation is to resurface this current skate park area, which I think was one of the comments from the kids as far as why it may not be used as much and what would help. I just want to ensure that, you know, we do have the budgetary capacity to support that.
Yes, we expect quotes back next week from a contractor to resurface. Steve educated me to resurface the pavement underneath the obstacles at the existing park. We'll get the bids back. We'll take a look at those. We have budgets in place out of our existing maintenance budget, and I can't promise when the contractor will be able to perform, but I anticipate 6 to 12 weeks we should have that resurfaced.
Okay. And then as far as priorities go, just supporting it being on the goals, but I do want to recognize and respect the goals process that has taken place over this year and previous years. And so as far as this goes, getting it on the this year's goals, I think with the discussion from the rest of council that it's not necessarily a budgetary expenditure, but staff time on, and I know that's not in the staff report, Dave, I just want to just recognize that we want to have it on the goals. We want to do some preliminary work on this, and really the big discussion will be fiscal year 17-18, when we have a real good discussion on this and how we lay out priorities on this. And I just say that primarily because, yeah, we're getting on there, how we're shuffling around some of our priorities with all the goals and objectives on there. I think we can, you know, do some work on this, but fundamentally we can have some discussions with our Rec and Park Board, and then it's really a long-term endeavor, so probably a bigger discussion in our goals update, fiscal year 17-18. So those are my comments on that, but I just want to finalize with just basically thanks to the kids that came out here taking responsibility and setting a great example on how to work with the community and city. So those are my comments on A-12. Noah?
Yes, thank you. I would agree with your comments there, and I'm particularly excited that we have a group of citizens that want to get involved and really help form the structure and steps going forward, and I think that's what this adjustment to our goals supports. And I know you've been very active in helping to facilitate the conversation. Just curious, the language here, research and bring to council for decisions. I think we anticipate next year's budget process starting to look more closely at the actual funding side of this, but in the meantime, doing some legwork to have a better understanding about what it is that would be most beneficial and the possibilities. So you did mention the Recreation Advisory Board. So I agree that's a good place to start, and I just wanted to ask you if you had some thoughts about the best way to ensure that the citizens that are interested in participating in this are going to be able to be involved, and how you are thinking, or maybe staff is thinking, the best way to engage with them and keep the thing moving.
I could comment, but I see Mr. Buckingham is ready to respond as well, and I know I'm looking out in the audience, and I think everybody's ready to hit the button on the computer to say send on emails and pick up the phone and get people out. But you know, that's not all part of it. We, you know, we have to do our due diligence to basically notify the community as well. Dave?
You're actually not joking. As soon as you vote, I'm going to hit send on an email to PG&E to start a discussion about using some of their property adjacent to the bike park, just as an option. But I think the way I see this go, this says to research and bring to council options. I think it is most realistic to expect that primary funding would be out of next year's budget. However, I think I would love to see us have options at mid-year this year in January, or even just to start putting some money away at mid-year this year. So if we have revenues at mid-year that we could allocate and put into a savings account, a fund, so that we pull some out of mid-year this year and allocate some from next year, which would be in March, April, May, June, that period, then ideally we will, in our budget process next year, which usually culminates in early June, we will have gone through the process of evaluating options, have selected one, and then be able to budget against it. And also say that this absolutely should be a partnership, and we've got great, phenomenal folks who want to participate in this partnership. From Jack and Steve and this crowd of young men who already have relationships with other skating groups around the county. So, and there's great examples for us to look at actually are also in other cities. So I'd say partnership and as quickly as we can, but we do have to recognize that if we want to do something really nice, it's going to take some money to do that, and we didn't allocate it for this year.
Okay, great. Is that?
Yeah, I think so. I just and I think you confirmed it, but just to ensure that the great energy coming from the community is gonna we're gonna help facilitate that and provide some structure for them to have input into the process forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks,
John. Let's come. Go ahead, John.
Thank you. Yes, and since you did pull it, I probably would have pulled it also for the same reason, and that's this. It's not about the skate park itself. It's about the process for goal setting. And there have been two comments about that. And I just want to say that I think I would be remiss if routinely any time somebody came to the podium with what they considered to be an important community issue, that if we already had goals and a budget established, we continuously added items or goals to our existing goals, we would be out of money and out of abilities to complete the tasks that we've already established through the routine process that we've established for goal setting rather quickly. And it's a little bit like the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I don't mean to put down any of the folks that have brought this forward, because I do believe that this project is very worthy of our consideration because of the fact that it involves getting kids involved with a sport that can not only teach them skills that are life skills, but skills that can prevent them and help them be in a place that's nurturing and encouraging. And as a result of that, I'm supporting this despite the fact that it's outside of what I would consider to be the normal process that we would use as a city to add goals that weren't quote-unquote pressing significant community need issues to the goals that existed. And so with that, I do consider this maybe to fall in that category, and that is we're saving our kids, in essence, with this. And I know we've got adults that do this as well. I heard that. It's great. I wish I had the knees to be able to do that as well. But just to add that comment, I think I would be remiss if I didn't. I do support the item, but I think it's important for us to be aware as a council of the process. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Christine, no? Thanks for sharing that, Councilmember Heading. I think I would echo your remarks and position on that as well. I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to discuss some sort of priorities and how we go about this and making sure we do have some staff work appropriate for this, but we're not allocating any funds with the exception of the minor funds taken to do the paving. I think that could be appropriate, and recognize that getting on this year's priority is worthwhile, but there still will be discussion in next year's goals and priorities to have, you know, this discussion here. And I think, you know, that's the next process for many of the folks out there to get involved. And you know, maybe we would have this discussion a year ago had, you know, this been on the forefront of discussion during goals. So thanks for that. Unless there's any other discussion, seeing none, I'd take a motion to approve item A12. Ezra. Motion by Councilmember Smuckler, second by Councilmember Heading. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. And that concludes our consent agenda. And with that, if you want to just take a short 5-minute recess, and we'll come right back and get right into our normal business items. We'll be back at 7:25. Thanks. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Moving on to our next item on the agenda, we're getting into business items. Item C1 is approval of absence of Council Member Matt Makowetsky from attendance of council meetings for a 90-day period. This staff report, Ms. Susan Slayton. Mr. Buckingham, are you going to start us off?
Don't have a presentation, Mr. Mayor, but Council Member Makowetsky has a medical condition. He's requesting a 90-day leave of absence, up to 90 days. His letter to the mayor is in the staff packet.
Okay. Thanks for that. I just wanted to open up for any questions from council, and then I don't have any speaker slips for this particular item. Is there anybody that wants to speak to this item? I don't have any speaker slips. Were there any questions from council? None? Okay. Okay.
My name is Bob Keller, resident of Morro Bay. I'm just here to support Matt Makowetsky, councilman. So I just ask the council for approval of absence of council member Matt Makowetsky from attendance at council meetings for a period of 90 days. Matt's done a lot for our town. He volunteers a lot of his time besides working on the council. And he's a longtime resident. In fact, he goes back generations in this town. So I just want to throw my support for him and hope he recovers soon and comes back on the council as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Seeing no other public comment, we'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Councilmember Johnson, you had some
I do. I have a
questions.
Question that I wanted to ask that I was asked earlier this week. And the question wasn't specific to Councilmember Makowetsky's condition or the reason he was asking for the leave, but it was sort of, well, what if he doesn't come back at the end of 80 days or 90 days? What does the city do if a council member resigns? So do we appoint? Do we have an election?
Three quick points. One is that there has been, since it's close to an election, this election is closed, and so there's no way to add an additional seat to this ballot. So this election will have nothing to do with any eventuality regarding Councilmember Makowetsky's seat. If a seat is vacated, the council may appoint somebody to appoint anybody from the electorate to occupy that seat for a certain period of time, and then that certain period of time is defined fairly specifically as the next election day for a special election, but not any sooner than 114 days, I believe it is. So there's some specific days that are set for special elections. There's one in April, I think one in November. But bottom line is the council can put somebody into the seat, appoint somebody to the seat quickly, but then also must hold a special election for that seat quickly.
Okay, that was the question I wanted to clarify. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Just to complete the picture there, approximately what would be the cost of a special election at this point?
Somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000.
That was the number that I would have guessed. So knowing that Mr. Makowetsky was able to recover almost completely from this and that it's very rare for this to come back and he's taking it very seriously, and that we were able to work through his last absence and be a functional council during that time with the four of us, I'm comfortable with granting this extension and hoping him quick recovery.
Thanks, Noah. Mr. Hitting?
It's very unfortunate, and I echo what you've said, and I support that. And I just I wish Mr. Makowski a very quick healing, and hopefully he'll be back soon, but I would support this request.
Christine?
Yes, I would add my voice to that, and I just wanted to just say there are specific, emotionally, I certainly would want to grant this this leave because it's a highly unusual eye condition. It isn't, just to clarify for people, it isn't like he's just not feeling well or something. It's a serious eye condition where his vision is at risk, and he thought he had it beat, and he doesn't, perhaps, so he does need to have this treatment extended immediately, so that's why he's not here now. But then the rational part of my brain says, well, there were a field of four candidates when he was elected, and he was elected very clearly by the voters. He stepped right back into his role immediately. It was as if he was not really gone at all when he did have the leave previously, so I know he can come right back in. And I just, you know, he really, if his healing his eyes is really his first priority, and then he also has a family and a job, so if we can relieve some of the pressure from the council at this point to allow him to try and get treatment and heal, then I think it is the right thing to do.
Thanks, Christine. I'll echo all the comments, and similarly, in the compassionate side, you want to be there for anyone in the community and on council. Foremost, he's going to have to take care of himself and his family. Should there be some indication that he's not going to be able to come back, heaven forbid, I trust that he would, make those indications to us. But, I'm not going to go down that road. I just want to go ahead and support the request for absence and wish him well, as I know we all do. And then as soon as he's back, we'll get on to business with all five of us. So look forward to that. Unless there's any other discussion, I would just take a motion to grant the 90-day absence.
So moved.
Second.
A motion by Councilmember Smuckler, second by Councilmember Heading.
And just for the record, that's 90 days as of today, starting today.
90 days as of today. Just for clarification. Okay, we're good on that. Mm-hmm. All in favor say aye. 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 Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. I wish you well, Matt. And with that, we'll move on to item C2. Item C2 is an update on fiscal year 2015-16 goals review. Mr. Buckingham.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the purpose of this is to provide the council and the community, especially, just a brief review of where we are in our goals from last year. So the fiscal year ended about 6 weeks ago, and a quick projection from each department on what's coming up in the next 3 to 6 months. Just recommend you receive and file this. Here's the agenda. I'm going to do a one-slide overview, and then we'll go through our six departments and a couple of the specific divisions, and then I'll talk about economic development with since the DCM is not quite yet here, and then we'll conclude. So a quick overview. The council established 73 objectives for fiscal year 15-16 in February of 2015. Those 73 objectives, the council then budgeted against those in June of 15. Staff has been working to complete those objectives. Council then established 88 new objectives for this fiscal year in February of this year. And important to note, this is sort of a public service announcement that this is a super important process, this council community process for establishing our annual objectives, as we just talked about with the skate park. So that process will start for next year in earnest in December, and then in January and February the council will go through a great public process to identify what the community's goals are for next year. But we're sort of looking back right now to last year. So five of the objectives of the 73 were suspended by the council for various reasons, leaving 68 to get accomplished. The staff has completed 76% of those, or 52 of those At the end of the fiscal year, 10 of them are ongoing to completion, and those were actually added to our objectives for this year. So those are still tracking along and are on the objectives document for this year. 6 of them are so close to completion that the staff is just tracking those to be complete, and they weren't added to this year's objectives, but we'll get them complete in the next couple of months. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Livick, Public Works. And I'm starting my stopwatch.
I'm starting mine, too. Thank you. As you can see, around town, we're continuing to work on the sidewalk improvements. But since the contract's been issued, we view that as being done because the actual construction part is the easiest part of most processes. We completed conversion of the triangle parcel or trapezoidal parcel that we received from Dynergy and added over 100 parking spaces. We evaluated city facilities, rights of way, over 52 buildings, piers, stairs, parking lots for compliance with ADA. We met our water conservation goals. We're down in 2015, 14% from our 2013 values. And year to date this year, we're down 18% compared to 2013. The reason why 2013 is important is that's what the state gauges us by. And surplus property, brought an item to council early in the year to evaluate surplus property. We sold the Mindoro and San Jacinto lots, and the Main Street near the freeway is still on the market. Goals that aren't quite completed, but we continue to work on neighborhood traffic management. At this point in time, it makes sense to incorporate that into the circulation element of the general plan and make that a performance measure in that item. City Works, we're still working on implementation. That will help us better manage the infrastructure. Energy savings, HVAC units are going up and solar units are going up right now, 12-year payback period. That completes my presentation. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Graham, and I have 4 seconds left.
And are there any questions from council as we're flying through these? Okay, we'll get them at the end.
All right, thanks, Rob. Moving on to community development, we recently received the good news that we were awarded another $200,000 in grant funding from the Coastal Commission. Council authorized the grant submittal back in May of this year, and we received the word that we received $200,000 on August 12th. So that's fantastic news and supports our ongoing general plan and local coastal plan update efforts. And more specifically, it'll result in better environmentally sensitive habitat mapping. We'll be looking at improving the lateral access along the Embarcadero side of the waterfront and identifying how we connect the entirety of the Embarcadero, because right now it's kind of been a one-off type situation, which isn't a great way to do it. So having a plan that incorporates what that's supposed to look like over time, I think, is important and will be a good goal moving forward. And then the Coastal Commission added a component to it they wanted us to look at, and that was an inventory of existing low-cost visitor-serving accommodations and to develop policies related to maintaining those. So I think that was a valid goal for their addition, and so we'll be adding that into the mix as well. We have moved forward, moving on to the next item, we've moved forward with our code enforcement division implementing it. We hired code enforcement officers back in October of 2015, so they've been on the ground since then. They're currently housed over in the police department and working on moving them over to the city annex and over the next couple of weeks, so they'll be relocated. We've completed residential design guidelines, interim residential design guidelines, which will probably be pushed out and become finalized design guidelines, hopefully, as part of the general plan and LCP update process. And we recently, City Council recently adopted our secondary unit ordinance. We've shipped that off to the Coastal Commission for certification. And preliminary word back from Coastal is that they have tentatively scheduled that for the October meeting, so we should have certification coming up pretty quickly. We've also been working on the general plan local coastal program for the last 4 or 5 months. We've done a lot of outreach in the form of at least one workshop. We've had a lot, quite a bit of stakeholder outreach taking place as part of this process, and we've been in the process of developing a draft vision and values statement, and which the City Council recently saw in the Joint Planning Commission and City Council meeting. Moving on to the next slide, items coming up. We're in the process of updating the city's sign ordinance. We've had to do a little bit of a code scrub on that to review some of our content-based sign language that's in there. We're almost done with that. Internally, we reviewed it. There's a three-person team, myself, the chairman of the Planning Commission, Robert Teft, and our intern, Ryan Russell. We've had it run through the city attorney's office and come back, and so we've got a lot of good comments there. We're going to roll that up probably the end of next week, and then we're going to start outreach with the various commercial neighborhoods, the four commercial areas in town. We rolled out, as Councilmember Johnson indicated, a survey for our residents related to the code enforcement. Response has been beyond expectation quite a bit. You see on the slide that there's about 800, almost 900. In fact, I touched base today with Ryan Russell, our intern, who's kind of monitoring all of this, and we're now up to 1,100 responses.
That's fantastic.
So that's 10% of the population. I mean, just fantastic. So we're going to get a lot of really great input out of this. Very happy with that response. We're working on the downtown waterfront strategic planning process the council authorized as part of our last, as part of the budget session. We anticipate completion of that hopefully by the end of the year, end of 2016. So that we're looking forward to that, and we've done outreach on that, and it was also included in our first workshop that we did for the general plan. So we have a lot of input that's going into that, and we anticipate at least having one more workshop on that specific item as well. And lastly, we are finalizing our draft vision and value statements, and those are going to be going to the General Plan Advisory Committee meeting on September 15th, at which point, assuming they don't have major changes to it, we'll be probably bringing it forward for a council look in maybe October. So, and that completes mine, and I'll be turning it over to our interim police chief, Larry Todd, for update on police.
Thank you. Last year's police department goals were completed under Chief Christie's administration, and the staff worked diligently to make sure that they were completed in a competent fashion. The purchase of body-worn cameras were completed, and they have been deployed to all of our officers and are making a significant difference in our day-to-day operations. Public safety ordinance regarding synthetic drugs and illegal fireworks were developed and brought to council and adopted. And the department's logistics needs assessment was completed, and it identifies future facility needs. Going forward, the police commander recruitment will close this coming, or actually the Friday the 26th, with testing to occur the week of October 10th. And we will hopefully fill that position shortly thereafter. The police chief recruitment selection is progressing with a target of having the new chief on board in the first quarter of 2017. And a major project that I hope to complete while I'm still here is the expansion and professionalism of our volunteer programs. We have a lot of great volunteers who have put in years of effort, but those programs need to be enhanced. I've met with both the existing police volunteer and the Neighborhood Watch volunteer groups. The police volunteers will be revamped into a nationally recognized Volunteers for Police Services, or VIP, program. Efforts are also being made to significantly expand both of those groups. And I want to focus not only on the current demographics that we have for our volunteers, but I also want to reach out to younger people, people in their 20s, people who are either going to school and have a career ambitions for law enforcement. Those kinds of targets need to be addressed as well. And then I also want to reach out to the Recreation Department to collaborate on our joint youth outreach efforts to enhance our overall crime prevention and police community partnership strategies. I'll now turn it over to the Fire Department.
Thank you, Chief Todd. We're making some steady progress with our local hazard mitigation plan. We do have a draft plan. In the next 30 to 40 days, we'll be working with our local hazard committee and also a workshop in place. We have been extremely successful in training our citizens and visitors on hands-only CPR during our public events such as Harbor Festival, 4th of July, some firehouse open houses, and our community wellness event. We're already seeing a difference in the field. Countywide, they have noticed that with a witness CPR and someone doing hands-only CPR, we're increasing their survivability by 30 to 50%. And this matches the nationwide standard also. On a side note, statistics have showed that 70% of our cardiac arrests are going to occur in our homes. So please, only takes 5 minutes to learn hands-only CPR. Stop by the firehouse. We'll train you at that time. We'll let you know when the next training is. But I think this is going to be societal change that we'll have on saving people's lives. We had our first community health event on May 15th at our Harbor Street Fire Station. It was a great success with Dignity Health and 10 other nonprofit agencies. We evaluated and screened 138 individuals in the general areas of general health, vision, and dental. Additional hepatitis testing was also occurred. It was a really good event, and everyone's happy with that. And our community emergency response team is strong and very well in a sterile bay. We had one entry-level class last winter and five additional team trainings. That's a total of 39 hours of training that we provided. And today we have 65 active members in a sterile bay. That's for the quick response. But additionally, we have an additional 130 people trained that's going to be able to help themselves or their neighbors. After fire season, we're going to be looking at schedule our next winter class for the entry level. On coming up, we're beginning our public-private partnership talks with Dignity Health. They're very interested in some of the approved pilot programs that we have in California, especially with hospital discharge patients, and also to continue to look at ways to enhance our community wellness programs. There's many things out there. I'm glad that Dignity Health is on board. Our next free community wellness health clinic is scheduled on October 30th at our Harbor Street Fire Station, and we're also hoping to include our local food bank. And we have we're hoping that they'll show up. And fire department and public works personnel will be attending a grant-funded training through the National Emergency Management Institute, EMI, in Emmitsburg, Maryland, in October. This training will be focusing on our emergency operations center's function during a regional emergency in our county. Now I'm going to give you to our harbor department.
Thank you, Steve, and good evening, Mayor and Council. Our objectives, goals and objectives from last year, we made a good amount of progress with the Central Coast Maritime Museum, as you saw them today. They're hoping to build the artist rendition that they brought today for their initial museum, sort of their starter kit museum, on all the flat work that was done last year. The boats were all moved earlier this year into position. We're still working with them on some what we call beautification of some of their stuff there, moving their that structure that holds the boat when it's attached to a submarine, that big white structure, it's kind of there, a little bit of a distraction, moving that out of the way and seeing if they can sweeten up the railing around the submarine, make it look a little better. We've got a draft license agreement in their hands. They're reviewing it right now. I think they're a little preoccupied with the San Salvador coming, so we may not see that until October. And we're also pretty close to getting a draft MOU in their hands, so hopefully we're bringing those forward pretty soon. And this was a goal this year as well. Maritime Services Facility, in other words, the boatyard market analysis was completed. The HAB has been reviewing, and the ad hoc committee has been reviewing a private party proposal that you know from Mr. Terry Simons that he's brought forward. We continue to work with them. We expect another report from him in September, September HAB meeting in a couple of weeks, and we'll see where that goes. And if it doesn't go anywhere, then we'll probably end up queuing up for a feasibility study to see what the next steps may be in that regard. Harbor Office logistical needs assessment was completed. It's not really going too far right now until we figure out where we're going with the Coast Guard proposal in their building. I wish I had great news to report from the Coast Guard, but it's been pretty much silent coming from them. So we've been feeding that process with our needs assessment as the information has become available, so we'll see where that goes. A couple things on this list real quickly. We've got two fish-themed bike racks under construction left over from last year. They'll be getting installed. Once we get those, and we're still keeping the fish cleaning station dream alive. DBW granted us $250,000 to do the initial launch ramp redo, which will include the fish cleaning station, so that should be coming forward here in the next couple of years. Coming up, and this year's lease management policy update, we're beginning that. We've kind of got the panel in the process starting to rough it out and figure out exactly how we're going to do, what folks in the city are going to be involved in that, and how we're going to redo that policy and then fine-tune that and get underway. Working waterfront definition and designation has begun. The Harbor Advisory Board last month took their first step. We had an agenda item to consider what the process would be. They've begun defining what the first steps would be and formed an ad hoc committee to start looking at that. We've got some good members on that board, so we'll be moving forward with that and defining what their mission is and their plans and lots of different avenues to go down in that regard. And we're also joining the National Working Waterfronts Network, which is a private nonprofit organization that helps communities like us kind of vision out what we're trying to do with our working waterfront. And see you at our Awareness Week. We will be bringing a full report to the September 13th council meeting on exactly what we're doing. But in short, we've been working with the Tourism Division, with Jennifer and her folks, and the NEP, State Parks, Fish and Wildlife, on activities and promotion and other things to engage with the Sea Otter awareness folks. We've been working with State Parks on their Sea Otter Savvy program. We've starting to distribute Sea Otter Savvy stickers to our kayak rental agencies and making those publicly available to raise their awareness. And we continue to work with Fish and Wildlife on interaction issues and try to bring those to the forefront. And up next, Administrative Services. And take it away, Susan.
Thank you, Eric. Administrative Services completed and published the fiscal year 2016-17 adopted budget, which included our second 10-year financial forecast. We selected new city financial auditors, the Poon Group, and they completed the 2014-15 audits by March 31st, 2016. Additionally, we completed labor negotiations with our represented bargaining units, which are Peace Officers Association, Firefighters Association, and Service Employees International Union. Those memorandums of understanding were presented and adopted earlier this evening. Coming up in the 2016-17 fiscal year, the Citizens Oversight Financial Advisory Committee is busy working on a public-friendly budget document. The public workshop will be held next Tuesday, August 30th, at 5:30 p.m. right here in the Vets Memorial Building. We encourage everyone to come and contribute their ideas. We are in the midst of hiring a new finance director and a budget and finance manager. And finally, we continue to refine our processes to comply with the March 2016 audit findings. That's it for Administrative Services, and now on to Jen Little for some tourism.
Thank you for the introduction. So it's my first meeting, so I get more than 2 minutes, right, Mr. Buckingham? So last year, the TOT is up for June. We're up 9% over last year's June, which is really good, and fourth quarter is looking overall very good. Overall, 15 last year, we are up 7.7% overall, which is good. Objective 6.G, that's me. Bring a new tourism person on board, and I'm here, and I'm being a big sponge, meeting all of the stakeholders and hearing what they want, what they need, what works, what hasn't worked. I've been here since June and took over the budget as of July 1, and it's going really well. We have the new PR and marketing firm, Mental Marketing, is also on board. They started July 1. They've gotten some really good exposure for us since they've been on board in LA Times, Orange County Register, Coastal Living Magazine, all sorts of different stuff, and they're really nice mesh because they also represent Maritime Museum and some other local folks, so it's a really nice match for us. One of the things that we're really working on strongly with them is shoulder market and also our midweek, getting our midweek up during, you know, off season, so that's one of the things we're really focusing on coming into the winter months. Coming up, we have OWAC, which is the Outdoor Writers Association Conference. This has not been held in Morro Bay for, I think, probably about 10 years, and it's quite a big deal. It's writers from all over California, and they write for really well-established magazines and newspapers, and they basically come here for 2 days and just soak up everything about our town, and then they go back and they write and they write and they write, and they publish just a ton of articles. They were housed in Avila Beach a few years ago, and they wrote on Avila for, I mean, months. It was amazing. So we have quite a good conference set up for them. The first day is their craft. They'll be housed at the inn at Morro Bay, and they'll be doing classes all day long. And we have a marketplace set up for them, and they'll see a lot of our nonprofits that are here, in Estero Bay and Los Osos and Morro Bay and just kind of really show them that side of it. And then the next day, we're taking them out, and they can pick two different activities, one in the morning and one in the afternoon of their choice. And they have anything you can possibly think of. We have them set up with all of our different outdoor activity people down at the Embarcadero. They can go diving. They can go out fishing for the day. They can do whale watching, kayaks. They can go stand-up paddleboarding with Sandy. So we've got some really great activities for the group. And then in the evening, we have a kind of a progressive wine and hors d'oeuvre through some other hotels and other restaurants. Since they're all the way out at the end at the State Park, I want to get them back into the Embarcadero and see some of the other hotel options that we have for their magazines. We have Roger Brooks coming in. Roger Brooks is a really well-known, he does seminars all over on tourism and marketing, and he's really good. And what he does really well is he brings together a destination that's good for the residents and the tourism and the businesses. And so we think this is a really good opportunity to get everybody in Morro Bay together and have them really get behind, you know, helping us grow in the way that we want to grow as a town. So he's coming in at the end of October, and that's open to all different businesses that are here in town. And then we have, of course, Maritime Month coming up, which you heard about earlier, and it's centering around, of course, San Salvador, but there's a lot of things going on with the Harbor Festival, Sea Otter Week. National Seafood Month is also that month. We have the Surfboard Art Festival, and then we're doing $2,000 giveaways to Morro Bay, where you can come to Morro Bay during the month. And Mr. Buckingham is going to do recreation.
Thank you very much. So just a couple highlights in recreation. The permanent pickleball courts were established in Del Mar Park. I had occasion to be in Del Mar Park around 9 in the morning the last three Monday mornings, and it's amazing. That place is packed at 9 in the morning, apparently every weekday. So they look great. They're incredibly well used. It was a wonderful partnership between the city, seniors, recreation, and the pickleball ambassadors to make that happen. A national citizen survey was completed, and that was sort of a quality of life recreation focused, but quality of life more generally. And importantly, that is really a great benchmark tool. So when we do it in future years, we can see we can measure ourselves and measure our improvement and measure areas that we need to improve in. Coming up, the Morro Bay Citywide Activities Guide is going to be published in October. It's going to be a great guide that covers not just recreation department things, but all recreation and activities available in the city. Hay Printing is our partner to get that out. Sales of advertisements is going super well. We're looking forward to Downtown Trick or Treat, partnered with the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber's got the lead on that, but the city is partnering with them as recreation works. That's one of our Sydney signature events, as you know. Wrong button. A couple of city maintenance focus items I just wanted to touch on. Two areas of interest: trash and then bathroom cleaning. So last week, the city installed new trash cans and redistributed trash cans in the downtown and the Embarcadero area. That was a 20% increase in number of trash cans in the downtown Embarcadero area. For info, the worst trash timings are normally Sunday afternoons, and that's because we don't have a trash pickup on Sunday because it's super expensive. And so we have a trash pickup on Saturday, and then the biggest challenge time is Sunday late afternoon because there hasn't been a pickup on Sunday morning. The city inspected all of the trash cans, or all the main trash cans in the downtown and Embarcadero area this past Sunday afternoon, and based on that review, it appears that we have the right mix of number of cans and frequency of emptying, but staff is going to continue to monitor. Here's a quick tour de force of some of the trash cans. So this was 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. There you see the cans down at the Rock, the dumpsters at the Rock, some along the Embarcadero, others in the downtown. There was one trash can that had a problem, and that's because it was sitting right next to a eatery business, and all of their customers were putting their trash in the city trash can. We've actually talked to the business owner. We've moved our trash can, and he's installing trash cans that he's going to empty there. So we're going to keep monitoring this, but we're hopeful that that we've got the right balance right now to give people the opportunity to throw their trash away. Bathroom cleaning, the city's responsible for for cleaning restrooms. The public restrooms in the Embarcadero zone, really, all over. So the Rock, Coleman, North T Pier, Chessboard, Tidelands, Cloisters, Del Mar, those restrooms are city responsibility. There's other public restrooms that are the responsibility of lessees. So, and that's something actually we've got a meeting scheduled week after next, I think it is, Eric, with those lessees to ensure that we've got a good system for them keeping their restrooms cleaned also. The city has tripled cleaning frequency in the last 12 months, but it might not be enough. This is a good problem, first of all, and it's not a diligence problem. If anything, it's simply a resourcing problem. Are we spending enough money to clean the bathrooms as often as they need cleaning? So to help figure that out, we're going to carefully measure use of those public restrooms starting this Friday for a month. That'll be 5 weekends and the 4 weeks in between. Understand it's moving out of the summer season, but it includes Labor Day weekend and the final weekend of summer here. And so we're going to measure that and not take pictures of after the staff's cleaned it, but take pictures throughout the day so that we see what it looks like based on our current cleaning schedule, and then we'll determine if we need to increase the amount of cleaning, and that's just a resource decision. And then finally, I'm marking down my times here so we can figure out who on the staff is going to buy the adult beverages for going too long, and I want to be part of that. So economic development, a couple of notes. The Opportunity Morro Bay outreach sessions that some key staff and I have been conducting really as a parallel effort to the Economic Development Strategic Plan has connected the city with over 100 local Morro Bay and regional business folks, influencers, and we're seeing concrete results from those outreaches. So, for example, we're getting folks who are proposing projects in Morro Bay that previously steered away from Morro Bay. So folks who are now considering investing in our city that weren't previously. So that's a pretty big deal, and those relationships are really important. The Economic Development Strategic Plan, the final will be out soon. The partnership with the Central Coast Aquarium has been established. You know that well. That is going well, and in fact, the aquarium is awaiting USDA approval for loan backing for a $20 million loan for an aquarium rebuild. We will perhaps have some of those beverages when that comes through. That'll be amazing. Great investment for our city as we build a great destination and a great place for folks to live and to play. The last slide I got here is some of the specific economic development investments that are either in conceptual phase or somewhere in the pipeline in our Embarcadero and downtown, sort of in that link zone. So a year and a half ago, the council gave direction to look at how to better link the Embarcadero with downtown. So just starting on the top left there, the off-the-hook revitalization, we've received proposals. We will bring a recommendation to you, three proposals, at your next meeting to determine the future of off-the-hook. As you know, you've granted consent of landowner for the Libertine, which will also be a significant revitalization of that property. Purple down there, the master leaseholder of Rose's Landing is considering a fairly substantial revitalization investment in that building. There in the orange area, about a block and a half further, is the $15 to $20 million aquarium project. And then the long green stripe and the green part in the middle, that's the Centennial Parkway link concept and the Embarcadero sidewalk widening. RRM, who has been helping us with a nine-month process that included significant public outreach on both of those. They are nearing completion of the two final concepts that the public provided input to, and we anticipate seeing those and showing those to you and to the community quite soon. And then finally, in the big blue piece there, that is all city-owned property in January you told us to begin doing outreach on and considering what could be there and how that might be invested in and revitalized. We've been doing that. It's been happening in concert with that Centennial Stairway and Embarcadero Sidewalk Widening Project. So those included some community input into this, and we'll be bringing a recommendation to you again at your next meeting on how to proceed with that project, what next steps could be there as well. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great. We'll go into questions for council. I don't have any speaker slips for this item, so I don't have any public comment, at least at this time. I'll look to my right, Mr. Heading, if you want to start off with any questions on this. No questions? No? None? No questions at all? And no public comments, so we can start into comments. You want to lead us off in comments?
Thank all of you for the excellent report. I just wish the community could see the vast amount of work that is behind this 30-minute presentation. Was it 30 minutes? Is that about right? Months of work and a significant amount of time. And I just want to thank all of you. It's just a huge list of goals that you have, and you have worked tremendously well to complete the vast amount of work that you have, and I'm just very thankful for that. The community should be proud of its leadership, and look forward to seeing the rest of the goals come to fruition. So thank you so much for that.
Noah?
Yes, I would agree completely. Thank you.
Christine?
Yes, I would absolutely agree as well. I know that what I would like to add, and I think I appreciate discussion on the goals tonight because they're going to be coming up again shortly. We set one-year goals this year based on timing and the way things were laying out, but we'll be setting two-year goals is on our plan for next year and then budgeting for that span of time. So it's many times you'll hear people say, well, why is the city doing this? Or why are you doing this? Or why are you doing that? And it all goes back to, well, it's because we set it as a goal. So we're just using this time to, again, promote goal setting, promote the community's engagement in coming out and telling us what they want to see our great staff accomplish for the community. So the goals that we're executing on, accomplishing tonight, were set through community involvement, community engagement, community suggestions, and sifted through at public council meetings and established and then budgeted. So, you know, sometimes we are flexible. There are things we don't quite get done, or there are things that we no longer wish to do, or there are things that we add. But the process is what gets us to this point of being able to have our staff accomplish things. So I'm just going to make a big plug for goal setting coming up again, because we need to see a full house for goal setting. You know, I want to see extra chairs brought from the cabinet for goal setting. But three other points then, a little bit more specific, I just wanted to point out. The increase, first of all, it's great to have our tourism partner here for this meeting. Welcome, Jennifer, to your first council meeting. I think it's one benefit for all of us to comment on that the absorption of the tourism function to be part of the city function allows us to hear these comments and hear the activities that are going on specifically at council meetings, and it allows the council to hear it and the community to hear it, and also peers and on staff to hear it, so that collaborations can more naturally happen. We don't have that dotted line any longer, and that was a challenging decision, but I think already tonight we can see the benefit of that. And one way we can see it is when we hear that the TOT numbers are increasing, we have 7.7% overall, then it's no wonder our trash containers are overflowing. And it's no wonder that we're having restroom maintenance issues. So if you go back in time, you can see the increase in visitors, increase in TOT, and the increase in trash. So the reality is we haven't been keeping up maintenance-wise with our TOT increases, and we just maybe didn't put those two things together, but it's very clear. So putting more resources toward that, understanding why we are not fully staffed appropriately. We're staffed for TOT probably 5 to 6 years ago when we've had incredible increases. So those are two things that are so clear when we all talk about it in the same room. So lastly on that, I do think that I hear a lot from businesses on the Embarcadero, and I've talked to Mr. Endersby about it too. If we could, the city, find a way to provide some guidance and assistance to the leaseholders and maybe the subleaseholders on how they can maintain and clean those facilities. And I'm speaking again about potties, but it is truly a measure of how well we are presenting ourselves to the public and to our own residents, because we often all go down there as well. So I do think there's a struggle on the Embarcadero. I think that many times the lessee gets forced to maintain those restrooms, and that's really the last thing they want to do. So if we can partner with them in many ways, work with the master leaseholder, then support what's going on from the subleaseholders, that's often how I think those contracts have been written, and that is a contract, and everyone sees what's going on, but the reality is, wow, it's a lot to maintain considering the increase in visitors. So it's something that we hear a lot of complaints about. It's something that I think we can get a grip on if we all work together. So great work. I appreciate the work you've done, and I think that many in the community do as well. It's just they're not here tonight to say it, but it's a great presentation. They can review it later and comment. Thanks.
Great, Councilmember Johnson. Thank you. I'll try to be brief with my comments, but there's so much good work, it's hard to contain that, so I'll just go through my list. WRF. I think we've been very diligent and working hard in that process. We know we've had to make some corrections, and I think overall there's been great response from the city, staff, council, through the community, and how that went out, how we've gone through that. So now we're on course to move to our South Bay site. So I just wanted to congratulate staff and our community for working through that. But it is, it's part of the public process. So I just want to speak to that. Public Works, the energy investment, exciting to see that. Sidewalk repair, they're, again, having lots of conversations with different business owners in the downtown, some of our hoteliers, questioning, how we're maintaining our sidewalks. I think it's great to see all that, and it looks great, and that's, of all things, it's exciting to see. The ADA assessment is another one that was out there. Pavement management plan update. I know we're moving towards that. We'll have another street summit on that. So continue to invest in tools, be it software or whatever it is, to be to gain higher efficiency. So just wanted to compliment there. Community development and public works, the City Works program. I know we were talking about how TOT could be a metrics to, bathroom cleaning, but I know the City Works is going to be a great tool for us, both for permitting, public works, contract planning, work order maintenance. So, there again, that was another investment that we as a city invested in, and so I'm excited to see that come to fruition, I think, this year. So we'll have full operation on that. $200,000 grant. Just my notes, since we started to pursue our update for the general plan, we've got $617,000 in grants since we started that process. So congratulations, Scott, to you and your staff for working hard on obtaining those grants. I know Gayska Velasquez may have been a part-timer with us, and she may not be with us, but I'll mention her name because I know she worked on that as well. $347,000 of that was just from the Coastal Commission. And I have to speak to that. I know you mentioned the secondary unit ordinance is going to be to our Coastal Commission in November, did you say?
I believe it's tentatively scheduled for October.
October. There again, I heard that and I thought to myself, wow, the turnaround on that to get certification. One, it tells me that in years past there was challenges with the Coastal Commission and funding. And I know the Coastal Commission advocated for funding so they could have the amount of staff to get projects through and to get certifications through, be it an ordinance or general plan and local coastal plan updates. So to hear that, that's a positive indicator. And I would say there's probably positive indicators that the relationship between the city and Coastal Commission. So I just want to congratulate you on that and recognize that. Police Department, just want to mention real quickly, you know, the volunteer program, and you know, great to hear the thought of getting more youths into the volunteer program, considering we have volunteer firefighters that use that as a stepping stone to become a full-time firefighter. It could be a great option for us to develop career police officers. We need to understand that there are a shortage of police officers nationwide. So I think that's great to be able to identify that and pursue that. So it was great to have that. Harbor Working Waterfront, you know, it's great to have that discussion as far as setting that on our goals and objectives for our Harbor Advisory Board. You know, I know we had Measure D discussion with our Planning Commission as far as interpretations and things. I know we'll continue to do that. I'm excited that the working waterfront designation that largely will be utilizing Measure D language will start the discussion on, you know, more robust discussion on the Measure D zone and may help us craft some policy. And we'll just see how that turns out with our Harbor Advisory Board and that discussion. Working waterfront designation would be exciting. And then tourism, you know, just I think it's great. You know, tonight we heard from the positive results from tourism and really the great relationships with our chamber. We've, you know, I see that the relationships with all that. Very, very excited to see how all that's working and gelling. So I think, you know, that just spills over to better business in the community. So I just want to speak to that. And if I missed any of my notes, I'm sorry. But overall, I mean, just to share where we're at with our goals and objectives, and Councilmember Johnson said it, you know, to set those goals and objectives and stick to them and get them and click them off one by one is important and how we've been doing that. I know we did have some discussion on a consent on whether or not we were adding one particular thing. Maybe we could have had a larger turnout for this coming goal if we hadn't approved the skate park. And this goal, we would definitely have people turned out for this upcoming one. But at any rate, you know, it's always, you know, our job, both as council and staff, to, you know, advocate for more community outreach and, you know, especially, you know, whether it's, you know, one particular issue or project, but for goals as well. So I'm confident we'll do that. Those conclude my comments. Unless there's anything else, this is a receive and file. Just wanted to say thanks. Okay. Anything else? Okay, great. Thank you. With that,
I'll just want to compliment Mr. Livick for keeping his presentation under 2 minutes. Nobody expected that. Scott, you're buying.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Rob. And with that, we'll move on to item C3. Item C3 is discussion on approval of city organization items and approval of the fiscal year 16-17 salary schedule. And we'll turn it over to you.
Can you bring that? Are you working on that? Are you working on bringing the PowerPoint up? Thank you. I'll just start in, Mr. Mayor, Council, and we'll get the PowerPoint caught up here. So the purpose of this is to provide the Council a general update on a number of city administration items and to get Council approval of several job descriptions. Our recommendation is that you approve 10 job descriptions that are included in the staff report. There we go. Perfect. So, quick background, fine-tuning the city staff organization and procedures to improve effectiveness and efficiency, two different things there. We want to do our job well, and we want to do our job efficiently. Many of these adjustments were approved by council over the past 18 months, and specifically in the FY 16-17 budget process. As I noted earlier in response to public comment, the municipal code does require the council approval of our detailed job descriptions. That's something that that may not have been happening regularly over time. We want to get caught up on that. So thus we're bringing those job descriptions to you for approval. And also wanted the, as you know, you approved and we implemented the early retirement management program. You approved it in April. We've been implementing it. I want to give you an update on that. So we'll start with that. Nine employees applied for the ERMP, the Early Retirement Management Program. We're projecting about $435,000 in savings over the next 10 years, most of that in the first 3 years from implementing that program. That savings comes from a transition of what are all Tier 1 employees to what will likely be mostly two Tier 2 and Tier 3 employees, which substantially reduces the city's CalPERS retirement contribution. So $435,000 of savings over most of that over 3 years. The program was also designed for an orderly transition of retiring employees. The program is closed now. There are no additional opening as anticipated for some years. Indicated when we brought that to you that this was not going to be a every year thing, but a one point in time. Perhaps in 4 or 5 years we'll see a utility of bringing this back. The city is now hiring to replace those retiring employees and to fill other vacancies. All but one of those employees, as the program required, selected retirement dates in November and December, and so we're in the process of that orderly transition right now. Speaking of that, there are the city has 17 current and or planned vacancies coming up between now and the end of the year. Nine of those 17 are based on the ERMP. Five of those vacancies are folks who have departed since June, and three of them have been long-term vacancies on the staff that we're filling now. Quick hiring update: the deputy city manager selection is ongoing. I'll almost certainly make a decision next week. The finance director selection is complete. We just completed negotiation, have a draft contract, and I anticipate signing that contract and having our new finance director report to work on October 3rd. That contract, the parameters that are fully within the parameters that you approved in your earlier department head resolution. Police chief is interim police chief. I feel like he's the permanent police chief, and I wish he could stay for 20 years. Is on board. As Chief Todd noted, recruitment is planned for really October to February to replace our police chief. Not in a rush to do that. Chief Todd is doing a fantastic job, and it would be really great to have his experience in department for a period of time before we so we can turn over a department that is super settled. Police commander, that recruitment is ongoing. The recruitment ends Friday. Anticipate a selection likely in September, perhaps early October. The recreation division coordinator, that selection is ongoing. I anticipate making a decision on that by the end of this week, and hopefully having that person on the ground here within a month or 6 or 5 weeks. The budget and accounting manager, I want to take a couple of notes on that. That recruitment closed last week. The city, as I think you all well know, needs to increase our capacity in our finance staff. The management partners organizational study noted that we were too lean in finance. And then our audit this year noted a number of things that areas that we could improve in finance. And I essentially identified that those areas of improvement were because of how lean we were in finance staffing, or at least in capacity or capability. So intend to hire a budget and accounting manager in lieu of the senior accounting technician, so to bump that position up, not to have two people, but to bump that one position from an accounting technician to a budget and accounting manager. I went through the applications today, actually. And a team of us are going through the applications. They look good. Moving that from a technician position to a manager position is about a 15% salary increase, $11,000 salary increase. Interestingly, though, because of what will definitely be a transition from a Tier 1 employee to a Tier 2 or 3 employee in that position, we're actually going to see $8,000 in savings this budget year, next budget year, and for several budget years with that transition. That job description is included for approval by the council tonight. The utilities division, as you know, there's going to be significant transition in the next 6 years as we build a $100 million wastewater water reclamation facility. The wastewater treatment plant, wastewater treatment division manager, Mr. Keough, is retiring this year, as is the wastewater treatment plant supervisor. And so both of those positions will need to be replaced this year. Want to do that with a view toward where we're going to be in 5 or 6 years with a new water reclamation facility. That new WRF will require fewer operators because it'll be technologically far ahead of what we have right now, and what will even and it will require even less maintenance because it will be much easier to maintain a new facility than our 62-year-old somewhat band-aided together facility. Further, the direction the council has given us to move toward a one water view of water as a single resource, whether it's clean water, dirty water, or storm water, all of those things lead us to make lead me to intend to reorganize the utilities our water sections into a single utilities division. So I should have noted back on this slide what we have right now. So at the top there you see the public works director. This does not show the rest of public works that's not associated with water. So engineering isn't on there and those things. But right now we have a public works director. And then to his left there you have the wastewater division. That's a manager level. That's Mr. Keough. Mr. Keough has two sections under him, the wastewater treatment plant section with a supervisor, and then the wastewater collection section, which is another supervisor. And then you have on the bottom right there, the water system section. That's Mr. James. So Mr. Keough, for all the dirty water things, reports to Mr. Livick. But then we have the water section reporting directly to Mr. Livick also. And then you have maintenance division that has historically, we had streets maintenance, historically taken the most interest in stormwater system repair. So where we intend to go is over a period of 6 years. So none of this is going to happen tomorrow morning. Where we intend to go is to replace Mr. Keough with a utilities division manager. This position will manage all water sections and functions: wastewater collection, wastewater treatment, clean water treatment, clean water distribution, and stormwater management. So that'll tie all of those water things under one manager. It will also combine the wastewater treatment plant function with the wastewater collections function. So you have one supervisor who is responsible for all of the wastewater, including its collection and its treatment. So that supervisor has an increased level of responsibility for two reasons from our current supervisor. First, the new WRF is going to require a level 4 wastewater treatment plant operator license. We currently require a level 3. And also, he's going to be responsible not just for the wastewater treatment plant function, but for the collection function. So Mr. Keough's position, the manager position, his span of responsibility won't change substantially, and the current salary schedule recommend keeping in place for that position. The supervisor position, however, that's going to be that position will have actually a significantly increased level of responsibility, a level 4 license versus a level 3, and responsibility for collection. So we're recommending that we increase that position, the salary of that position, and I'll get to that in the next slide. And then also the stormwater as a function will be managed by the utilities division manager. Our environmental programs manager, Ms. Hansen, still has an important programmatic hand in that, but but managing stormwater as a function. And when I say as a function, that's not a separate section of people. Much of that work may be done if we're installing new stormwater drains would be done by contract likely, but we want one person who is thinking about all water from a management perspective. Without going into, I'll use this simpler chart. So what you see in blue here is, again, Mr. Livick at the top, and then with a single utilities division manager, and then two subsections and a function. One section, which is wastewater collection and treatment, one section, which is clean water treatment and distribution, and then the stormwater function. So what that effectively does is it cleans up the organization pretty significantly, and Rob will rely on that utilities division manager to worry about clean water treatment and distribution instead of Rob thinking about that himself. He'll still think about it often, though. Don't need to go into great detail on this. This is our personnel FTE chart, but what this shows is right now between wastewater and water treatment and distribution, we have 18 FTE employees. On the bottom left in the dark square, that's the folks that run the treatment plant, and in the middle are the folks that run the collection system. And on the next slide, what you're going to see is all of those folks are combined together into one section, wastewater treatment and collection. And then they have one collection supervisor who is the chief plant operator for the new plant. And that because of the reduced complexity of operating the new WRF and the reduced maintenance requirements, we anticipate reducing the number of FTE positions in water from 18 down to 16. Some of the transitions and impacts. This is a 5-year transition. No employee is going to be laid off tomorrow or intended at all. Fully anticipate that we will achieve that 2 FTE reduction by transitions, retirements, not by laying off employees. And there are going to be no major changes immediately. Mr. James is not going to wake up tomorrow morning and report to Mr. Keough. We've got 5 years to execute a discipline transition. The main thing I wanted to communicate to you is, because we're about to hire a utilities division manager, we need to hire to replace Mr. Keough and hire to replace Mr. Gervin, the plant operator, and we want to hire the right people to take us through that 6 years. So that's the importance of communicating this now. So the primary changes, it reduces the number of FTE employees from 18 to 16. The utilities division manager will have oversight on all water. The new job description is provided for your approval. There's no budget impact anticipated for that. The collections and treatment is consolidated into one section. That will actually eventually reduce one supervisor position, which will be a slight budget savings, because you recall that we have a collection supervisor right now. As personnel transition, we will not have a collection supervisor, but we will have a second lead worker in the collections and treatment section. The collections and treatment supervisor will also be the new plant operator. It will be his level 4 license that the new plant is operated under. A moderate salary increase there, almost identical to the budget manager position that we described. $11,000 increase, about 15%. And I'll say these changes are consistent with other cities. For example, Pismo has exactly this system where they have a utilities division manager who supervises clean water and treatment and collection, and they have treatment and collection combined. So this is not some newfangled thing that we're proposing. These are the 10 job descriptions that are in the packet for your approval. The first 7 discussed as we went through this presentation. The last 3 we discussed. I just want to quickly highlight the reasons for the other ones. So the community development director, that department was created last year, and the job description for the director needs to be approved. The finance director, as noted, we drafted the job description before we started recruiting for the position. That gets changed from an administrative services director to a finance director. The public works director was modified to remove the community development functions from the public works director since we created a community development department last year. The city clerk position or job description adds the risk management functions that are already being performed by the city clerk. The environmental programs manager has been updated to a manager. That's a something that you approved, I believe, in June. The tourism manager, as you know, you created that position earlier this year, and we need to formally get the job description approved. And the maintenance field supervisor, same thing. You approved that new position earlier this year when we completely consolidated all maintenance functions under a field supervisor, and we need you to give formal approval of that job description. The salary schedule that's included, that is the final fiscal year 16-17 salary schedule that is included in the staff report. It reflects the MOU changes that are adjustments that you approved earlier this evening on the consent calendar, and it adds the following positions to the draft schedule that you approve with the budget. That we just discussed, the utilities division manager, the wastewater treatment and collection supervisor, the budget and accounting manager, and the environmental programs manager. Our recommendation is that you approve the 10 job descriptions included in the staff report and that you approve the FY 16-17 salary schedule. I'd like to go back very briefly to the job descriptions because a diligent person gave us some help today and noted a couple of things in a few of these job descriptions. So I'd like to tell you a couple of corrections to them or additions and have you include those in your approval. Without going into which ones, I believe three of them left off who that position is supervised by. The finance director is supervised by the city manager. The city clerk is supervised by the city manager. And the recreation division coordinator will be supervised by the deputy city manager or by me in the interim. So I'm going to add that language to those three job descriptions. The finance director job description intend to add two items, one to clarify or to sort of clarify the obvious, but that this person requires a strategic focus on our finances, including responsibility for a 10-year budget forecast to ensure that that there's that long-term strategic capacity or requirement built into the job description, and also that they have specific responsibility for financial oversight of major projects such as the wastewater reclamation or the water reclamation facility. And finally, the tourism manager position, we intend to add a line that position is the primary liaison with the county TMD, and we didn't include that in the job description, and I appreciate Councilmember Heading catching all of those things. So with that, I'll go back to the recommendation and turn it over to you, Mr. Mayor, and that should you approve those job descriptions, then we will include those adjustments that I just noted.
Great. We'll go into questions with that. I don't have any speaker slips for this. I'm looking out at the audience and making sure we don't have any people that are interested in public comment on this. And since we don't, we'll go into questions from council and then discussion. Mr. Heading, you want to start us off on questions?
Sure. Just one question, and thank you for that overview, Mr. Buckingham. What is your thought, and or do we have a policy and or specific procedure for succession planning? And by succession planning, I don't necessarily mean promoting from within, but I mean when you have significant brain trust within a manager and that manager suddenly leaves, you don't want to get caught short without that knowledge being transferred somewhere. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
We have a start of a succession planning policy that we implemented about a year ago. It's a start, and on our goals and objectives, I believe for this year, because it was a management partner's recommendation, is to more fully develop that succession planning policy. And I actually considered adjusting that slightly with this goals update, because it sort of leads you to believe what you said, that it's focused on internal succession. There are great reasons and times to do internal succession, but also we are quite a small staff, and there's some areas where internal succession simply is not a – we're just too small to do that, or to have that be our norm or our policy. So we do have a very basic policy in place, and have an objective this year to expand that into a policy that specifically, I think, considers more that brain trust issue. And ensuring, I would describe it almost more as a cross-training requirement to ensure that we've got good cross-training in all levels of the staff. So should we have a quick departure and not an orderly succession, then we don't lose a ton of information.
All right. Noah?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Heading's question really is a nice lead into what I want to talk about and get a little more detail on, and it's specific to the wastewater treatment plant. And we know just the amount of time and resources that are required to keep that aged plant in operation, and the skills that Mr. Keough and Mr. Gerving have brought to the table, and the experience that they have, I don't expect could be very easily replaced, just given how much duct tape and sweat has gone into the plant, keeping it in operation. So you and I have talked a little bit about this previously, when we all anticipated both of our leaders at the plant to retire in the near future, and with this program, that's come slightly sooner. So just wanted to hear from you your thoughts on how to ensure that even a qualified operator may come into the situation of managing that facility, their current facility, and find that there's a need for some institutional knowledge. And I would expect both of Mr. Keough and Mr. Gerving to be available, but have you how much thought have you put into making sure that we have all the resources necessary for that new leadership to come in and be successful?
Fairly significant amount of thought. So first, we are beginning to advertise now to replace several of the more junior folks who are retiring this year and departing. And so we are absolutely not going to shortchange ourselves on operating our existing facility vis-a-vis number of people. So that 2 FTE reduction is not going – you're not going to see that in the next 2 years. There are likely several more retirements in the 3, 4, and 5 years from now, and that's when we'll achieve that FTE reduction. More to your point, though, the having somebody who with knowledge of wastewater treatment plants and who can operate our plant and keep it maintained is very important. It's absolutely on our mind. One reason why we are getting that recruitment out, I don't think it's out right now, but it'll be out. I believe the end of August is when we had targeted to get that recruitment out. I will note that we have a highly licensed, and I'm not making a hiring decision here, but I just want you to know that we have a very skilled, knowledgeable, and fully licensed lead worker in the plant who does not intend to retire, and I'm absolutely positive intends to apply for one of those two positions. So there is, again, we're going to do an open, broad, robust recruitment. But we also know that we have one candidate who has a level 5 license and has been helping operate that plant with love for many years.
Thank you. That's good to hear. And then just briefly, under the environmental program manager, I did notice that we didn't have any language in there about the urban forest management plan. So
think that would be a good thing.
Excellent.
To add there.
Thank you. I forgot to note that when I was when I lost my notes. With your approval, I'd like to add a specific responsibility for the Urban Forest Management Plan to that job description.
Christine?
I just have one question that just came to mind. Great questions from my other colleagues. So this is an update for a cleanup process to ensure that we are doing things we're supposed to be doing. And so we will accomplish a lot tonight getting these approved. How often are you assuming this would come back where we'd have to? So in other words, all of our current job descriptions and these are, will now be approved. So is there a cycle we'd have to bring it back once a quarter, or just trying to figure out how we don't fall behind, like we've kind of been behind previous to you coming here to Morro Bay, Mr. Buckingham, and how we can stay current with this kind of process? How many you would anticipate, and then how often we would see this as an item?
So I see Ms. Swanson's mind going like this right now. So I'll use this as a two for example. So based on where I believe our recruitments are going for finance and DCM, I fully expect to complete the transition of human resources to Ms. Swanson this year as described to you during the budget process. So when we do that, we will now be smart enough to bring an updated job description to you that includes that, hopefully before we actually do that. So that's one thing. And then Dana's mind is going like this, and we will, I'm sure we'll have a system in place so that we are bringing job descriptions to you for your approval in a more timely fashion than perhaps has been done in the past.
Okay, great. I mean, I think this is an exceptional staff report because there's a lot of pieces that are moving, a lot of ways we have to be responsive to what's happening. But I think, you know, obviously something in the future, if it's things that we've talked about at the budget time, then a consent item, I'm sure we could start to see those on consent.
Absolutely. So we'll,
okay.
So,
and then, unless it hasn't been budgeted.
I would anticipate that in September you'll get to approve a new job description for Dana, which includes HR.
Right.
And you'll probably see that on consent, and should you want to pull it off and talk about it, that's great.
Right. So I think, you know, if we've budgeted for it, then it makes sense that we see it on consent. If it's something new and different, then of course we'll.
Yes.
I would assume that people want to talk about that. Okay. Thank you.
Great questions. I really don't have many questions to add on this. I was just thinking only that we are updating some of the job descriptions, and it's not going to be uncommon for us to see some of these job descriptions or other job descriptions come back to us in the future. In addition to our annual budget review, when we are talking, it seems as though it may be it's an incidental, but we do talk about our organization, organizational structure at that time, and our budget is ensuring that organizational structure is properly budgeted. So I just make a subtle comment on that, and those are the only comments I have. And with that, unless there's any other comments from council, I would take a motion to approve staff recommendation with the additional language. Do you want to just kind of revisit the language additions real briefly, Mr. Buckingham?
Three of the job descriptions left off the part about who has oversight on that position. So the finance director, in most job descriptions, it says language to the effect of, and you report to so-and-so. And so the finance director will add to the finance director that the finance director reports to me, that the city clerk reports to me, and that the recreation division coordinator reports to the deputy city manager. And then on the finance director, add a line about oversight of our strategic financing, 10-year budget forecast, and specific language saying oversight of certain large projects. I won't say such as in the job description, but I will say here is such as the water reclamation facility. And then environmental programs manager, add line on the urban forest management plan, and the tourism manager, add a line as the liaison to the TMD in appropriate language that discusses that the how tourism interacts with the countywide TMD.
Okay, John, you had questions or comments?
Just a discussion, if we could.
There's no motion at this point. I was just
right.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Great. So I just wanted to point out a few things because, one, again tonight, we heard public comment about job descriptions, the hiring process in general. I've received emails, run into individuals that have raised concerns about that, and I just want to say this. I think that has been more perception than reality, because one of the things I hear is that, oh my gosh, there's been huge turnover since the new city manager has come on board. Well, I think you can see tonight much of that is really the early retirement program that has benefited not only this organization, the city, but also the individuals who have taken part in that. And so if you look at that, that's well over 75% of the turnover that's occurred. And to me, that's very positive turnover. I mean, I hate to lose good people, but at the same time, good people that have an opportunity to retire early and get quality of life and save the city money is a win-win situation. And so I wanted to clarify that. Two, also, same comment again about the hiring process and job descriptions. I have been involved as a senior executive in probably several hundred hirings. I've been involved in hiring here along with Mr. Buckingham in the process that he uses. It is robust. It is inclusive of not only the community, but also other senior executives of like skill sets when a specific position is recruited for. In addition to that, the criteria for the job are well laid out prior, known to the individuals that have applied, and known to those that are involved in the hiring process, which usually involves no less than 3 to 4 teams of people that individually interview that person. And so the comment was made, are we hiring and making job descriptions up for the person or for the position? And I can say without a doubt it is the position that we're hiring into and not creating jobs for people unless there is an organizational fit and you find the exceptional candidate occasionally where a city manager or a CEO in an organization has the latitude to come and ask for changes in any position that possibly that individual has been recruited for that may be a better fit in another part of the organization. And so I also want to point out the significant savings that we have had in not using a recruiter. Recruiters run $25,000 to $30,000, if not more, for these kinds of positions. And I think, you know, a rough calculation, we've probably saved over $200,000 in recruitment cost or will in the near future because of a very good, robust process that is in-house, that works well, and that takes into consideration also internal candidates. And so I just wanted to point that out because of the continuous innuendo that is brought forward and the perceptions of reality, which in my mind are not really the truth of what's going on. Lastly, I want to say that I think the reorganization of the utilities department is right on. I think the One Water Plan and the integration of those functions with the appropriate staffing and skill sets is absolutely necessary now. And the iterative plan for that to occur over a period of years is forward thinking. And so I applaud you for that and for thinking in that manner. And lastly, if I said lastly last time, this is lastly. The last thing that I will say is this has improved, or this will and has improved organizational capacity and capability. And also, it has been done within the context of cost containment and a very sharp pencil when looking at the changes that have been made. So I'm grateful for the way that you've handled this and for the positive way that these recruitments and hiring processes have occurred, and now for the documents that we have before us that are excellent job descriptions. And so with that, just wanted to make those comments for clarification. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for those comments. Appreciate them all. And with that, unless there are any follow-up comments, I wouldn't imagine there would be after that. I think you spoke well for all of us. And take a motion to approve the recommendations that were as laid out by staff and with the additions that have been discussed tonight. Is everybody comfortable with that? Okay, so I need a recommendation, or excuse me, a motion to approve staff recommendation with the addition of the described changes to the job descriptions.
I would be happy to do that, make that motion.
We have a motion and a second. We have a motion by Councilmember Heading, a second by Councilmember Smuckler. And any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. Thank you. And with that, we'll move on to item C4. Item C4 is authorized award
Mayor
of consultant. Yes, sir.
I just want to clarify, we approved the salary schedule. Well, I just put that in the motion.
Okay. So we made the recommendation for, we did a staff recommendation for the organizational items and the salary schedule.
Yeah.
So just to confirm that,
I would amend to include the salary schedule.
And we have an amendment and a second to include the salary schedule, and I'll just make another vote on that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. Thank you for catching that and the clarity on that. And with that, we can move on to item C4. Item C4 is authorized award of consultant agreement for preliminary engineering services for project 05-5391R, State Route 1, Main Street at SR 41 Interchange Improvements. And this is, Mr. Leibig, will you start us off on this?
Yeah, I'll start us off on this. So the focus of this presentation is going to be on the contract award, but we're also prepared to answer some specific questions regarding the some of the past public information that's been presented on some of the design aspects and alternatives that have been looked at through the intersection control evaluation that we've been going through over the past 2 years with Caltrans. So I'm going to turn it over to Rick, who's going to lead us through that presentation, and I'll be here for comment and answering questions also.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm pleased to be here tonight to give you a presentation and ask that you receive a report on the status of our State Route 1 at Highway 41 intersection improvement project. We're here tonight to review the recommendation from staff and the PWAB to award a consultant agreement to Omni Means Limited for a preliminary engineering services support work on project 05-539R. And also to authorize the Public Works Director to execute that agreement in the amount of $260,213, which includes a 10% contingency. A couple of key issues that we would point out from the staff report about the request for proposal itself. The RFP was broadly distributed regionally through the city website, statewide through the California Political News, nationally via several procurement bulletins, including the MCinfo.com, bidjudge.com, and the city has also recently acquired ability to use the most widely used national billboard that government services use. It's called publicpurchase.com. In spite of that broad distribution and the fact that we sent a very directed outreach to nine firms that we knew to be well qualified to do this type of work, we only received one proposal. And as you can imagine, that was somewhat perplexing. So immediately before we interviewed that team, we reached out to some of those other firms to find out why. And actually what we found was really rather reassuring. The reasons varied quite a bit. Some of it had to do with timing and other commitments of those other firms. But they also affirmed the fact that OmniMeans was widely regarded for their capabilities in this particular area. They knew that the OmniMeans team had a strong rapport with the Caltrans review staff that we'd been working with, and that they've got a really thorough knowledge of this type of project. They're performing this type of work throughout districts 5 and most of the other districts in the state. So we were assured enough that we invited OmniMeans in for an interview. They brought in a strong project team that's got very ambitious project goals. They demonstrate a very thorough knowledge and understanding of some of the challenges that we're going to face in moving this project forward. And most importantly, they have a really strong relationship with our resource sponsors. And I think they have demonstrated already an ability to help us reach out and connect with people to show them the value of the project and motivate them to want to support the project through grant funding. Some of the key aspects of our consultant agreement. The proposal defines scope for two tasks. The first task, preliminary engineering and environmental assessment. We already have authority from FHWA and Caltrans to proceed with. The second task is the design engineering phase, and we cannot proceed with any aspect of that phase until we complete the first phase satisfactorily and we get authority to move on to that next phase. That's a very important aspect of our contractual relationship with OmniMeans, because were we to proceed without that authority, we would no longer be eligible to utilize federal funding, and we certainly don't want that to happen. So for that reason, we're asking you tonight to only award the first task of this project, and then we'll come back to council in about a year. After we've successfully completed that first task, we'll give you an update of what we've done and what we still need to do. We'll renegotiate that second task, refine the scope at that point in time, and then award or recommend an award of that second task based on the same rates that have been established with this first task. So this is a task order contract. It gives us the ability to award subsequent work as the process evolves. I would point out that you received a hard copy of the updated contractual agreement tonight just before the meeting began. Copies of that updated agreement are available in the back for the public to take a look at. And it really just reflects the fact that it's very important that we not proceed with task two until task one is completed and we receive authority to move on with the project. That's noted in paragraph 2 under services in the second sentence.
On what page?
On the first page.
First page?
Yes, sir. And then also on the second page under paragraph 5, payment, you'll see that we refined and clarified that this is the payment schedule set forth in Exhibit 1A for Task 1 in the environmental determination and planning permits, and that the amount shall not exceed $236,557, the total Task 1 amount. And in addition, at the sole discretion of the Public Works Director, we can approve additional work related to Task 1 valued at no more than approximately 10% of the total Task 1 amount. And that would be not exceed $23,656, which brings us to the total contractual amount of $260,000. That I mentioned in our recommendation. It further clarifies that additional payment can be provided, understanding that the parties understand and agree that if the amendment or the agreement's amended to add Task 2, design engineering, with the final scope and fee for additional tasks to be negotiated at that time, but at the same rates noted in Exhibit 1.
So, excuse me, so those are the only two changes. So just for the sake of the viewing audience, perhaps we can just put this copy and just put those two paragraphs on there and just breeze through that one more time for the viewing audience that that may have seen this in the staff report. I know we have hard copies here, but the audience may want to see see what those are, and then we can just talk through those real quickly. Yeah. Pardon me? Okay.
So there you see the changes highlighted in orange that I just went through.
Okay, on payment. And then page 1, you were talking about in services as well. That's one more?
That's correct.
So maybe we could just start there and talk through that, and then just for the viewing audience, so, you know, those who have reviewed the staff report would be able to understand what we're talking about. I know it seems repetitive, but just want to clarify that.
Okay. This change to paragraph 2 clarifies the fact that we cannot proceed with task 2 until task 1 is satisfactorily completed and we receive authorization to move forward with that second task.
Okay. Noah?
Yeah, I just want to follow up on that, and mostly get down to the description of task 1 and task 2, because we all received some emails and have heard some concern that this project's moving forward very quickly and decisions have already been made about what sort of improvements, whether a roundabout or a signal or so forth. So, Mr. Sauerland, if you could break it down a little more about what Task 1 entails and when the decision of whether we go with a light or a roundabout or something else that emerges during the environmental process would be made, and you know, the timelines within that, because I'm sensing that the community is really anxious about. Some assumed that we were making a decision tonight about whether we were going to go with a roundabout or a traffic light. We heard quite a bit of comment from the Public Works Advisory Board about wanting to make sure that there's good public input about those very decisions. So if you could break it down a little bit, not as much. I'm not as concerned about the actual contract itself, but the actual work product and the community decision that will be made out of it.
Right.
And if I may interject, I just want to make sure that we cover the change in what we're discussing in the staff report. that was published, and then we're looking at the hard copy. So as we cover that, I know we just want to, we're covering this, the highlighted portion, and then when we get done with your questions, we'll turn the page to payment and go over those highlighted items as well. And just, I just want to make sure we're thoroughly going through this. So if you just can respond to Mr. Spuckler's
might I suggest that we cover the contract issues? I mean, we can do that fairly briefly. They're while significant, not that complicated. Then we have some slides that address the scope of what task one is in the presentation.
Okay, thanks. That sounds good. Thank you. So just this particular highlighted area, we covered that.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Thank you. Sorry if I'm being a little bit overly diligent, but I think it's important. Yeah.
Okay, the changes that you see highlighted in orange in Section 5 payment really just clarify the fact that $260,000 amount that we're asking for authorization on includes the basic task at $236,000 plus that 10% contingency in case we need to make some adjustment in scope as we move through that process. And let's see. And then it also further clarifies that that amount only includes task number one, and that task number two will not be awarded, and the price will not be finally determined until we have authority to move forward from Caltrans and the FHWA.
Okay. Is everybody on page with that, at least on council? I know we've got people in the audience that are reading the amended copy as well, so I just want to make sure we're all good on that explanation. Okay. Thank you.
Now we'll continue on with the presentation
yeah,
and talk in detail about what task one is
yep.
and what that really means as far as design evaluation, the intersection improvements. Just before we move on to that, I just want to point out that we went through two phases of ICE intersection control evaluation, very technical studies with Caltrans to evaluate which intersection improvements are predicted to perform the best. From a technical standpoint, the roundabout performs better than a signalization over the long term. We'll see a signalization having degradation during the lifetime of that signal. So we'll see backups at that intersection before the end of the lifetime of the signal. So that's one of the main reasons the roundabout is, from a purely technical standpoint, is a more efficient and way to move traffic through that intersection. Okay, Rick.
So we have questions.
Just a brief question.
Councilmember Johnson, thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. How long is the life expectancy that you mentioned?
I think we look out to 2040.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, the most important thing to understand at the beginning of this process is that this is going to be conducted as a Caltrans capital project. And what that means is that because this is at the conjunction of two state highways, it's an important part of the California state highway system. And so Caltrans is going to maintain direct oversight throughout this entire process. They have a very strict process that is very process-oriented, and we'll be following their procedures and their directions to make sure that we cross all the T's and dot all the I's as we move through that process. That process does include a robust public outreach throughout its entirety. Caltrans maintains authority as the lead agency for both CEQA and NEPA throughout this process, and the city will be a responsible party. What that means is that council will not be asked to approve the environmental documentation on this project. That'll be done by Caltrans. But as a responsible agency, you will review that environmental determination and provide a concurrence or provide concerns.
Just want to add, through the permitting process, the land use permit and the coastal development permit, the city will be the lead agency over those processes. So it'll run its way through the permitting the land use process through our planning commission and city council for the coastal permit and the land use permit.
Okay, just briefly again, and about where do you see that land use process, CDP process coming in on the timeline?
After CEQA is complete.
And then how many months or years out are we from this?
Probably a year.
Okay, so in 1 year, this will, if things go well for any activity there, one or the other. Are
1 year
still, are
to
we
get
still
to
looking
the
at
permitting
that?
Process, then we'll commence final design. I think construction is scheduled 2018, 2019, or
ready to list the end of 2018, 19.
Ready to list at the end of the 18, 19 fiscal year.
Okay,
is what the preliminary schedule shows.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I think the genesis of some of the concerns that you've heard about already coming to some conclusions is based on the fact that as we've moved through the intersection control evaluation process, step one and step two, we have evaluated the technical merits of these particular alternatives. And we have determined that from a technical perspective, the roundabout performs the best. Now it's time to move through the environmental process and to consider those issues as well. That's the appropriate time to engage the public in this process, and we fully intend to do so. In fact, we've already started that process back as early as September of 2015 after we finished step one and we're moving into step two. We reached out to what we believe to be the key stakeholder with an interest in this process and this intersection, and that's Morro Bay High School and all the students and parents that move through this intersection on a daily basis. And we knew that there were concerns expressed about these alternatives back in 2001 and 2002, and we wanted to be sure that we were adequately addressing all the concerns as we move forward through that process. So we met with the principal and the head of facilities for the Coastal San Luis Unified School District to brief them on where we were going and what we were doing. And frankly, we went into that briefing with an expectation that they would have some issues that they would want us to address. We were quite surprised when we finished our briefing, and in fact, they asked us how soon could we get started. They were very strong proponents of this project. They're very familiar with roundabouts and the success that roundabouts have seen throughout the state, and they feel like it's a safer alternative for the students and will more effectively move traffic and school buses into their facility. So we're encouraged by that. We've also, for the last 2 years, been working with two potential developers at this intersection because we wanted to be sure that they were aware of potential changes and to make sure that their plans didn't impact the potential footprint for either alternative. We've developed a very cooperative relationship with both of those developers, and I think they both recognize that they will see benefits from either alternative, but they're on board, even with some of the changes in access that would occur as a result of the roundabout alternative. So I think we've made progress in that regard. We've also briefed PWAB on four occasions now, as early as October the 21st in 2015, and three times beginning in June of this year, and then July, and then again this month on our progress as we move forward with the RFP. We had a PWAB member participate on our selection panel as we interviewed our potential project team. He was quite impressed with the credentials that they brought to the table and the expertise that they've exhibited. We've provided two briefings to SLOCOG back in November and December of last year that have helped move forward potential funding for this project. And we've briefed City Council as early as January 24th, 2012, on our desire to move the project forward. And then we've updated you again in November of 2015 as we have asked for authority to sign a programmatic agreement with Caltrans that would allow us to continue moving the process forward. We've briefed where we were at and where we were going as we set goals for this coming year, and then also twice as we went through the budget allocation process. We will certainly continue that robust activity, and the project schedule, while it's not defined specifically at this point in time, shows that it will continue throughout both Task 1 and Task Number 2. I envision that we will organize an early kickoff meeting sometime in September, probably after our street summit, because I think we'll benefit from feedback.
Can you elaborate on a kickoff meeting? Is that a public kickoff meeting? Is that a team kickoff meeting?
First, it will be a team kickoff meeting with our consultant team and the Caltrans oversight team. We've had probably three meetings with that team during the course of the ICE process so far, but now that we've got the team on board to complete this process, we do have a new Caltrans project manager. I will tell you that I work very closely with Mr. Dave Rasmussen on three really critical projects when I worked for the County of Monterey. He's a very proactive project manager, somebody that we will certainly benefit in his ability to move things forward on a quick timeline. He knows how to corral his oversight team and get answers on a reasonable timeline, and that's very important as we go through this process. So we'll start off with that kickoff team meeting, and during that kickoff team meeting, we'll define what specifically the environmental issues are that Caltrans sees, and then I think we will have a serious discussion about who are some of the key project protagonists members of the community who have expressed concerns that we can reach out to. And I think the best way to reach out to them is one-on-one, so that we understand up front what their concerns are, so we know what needs to be addressed in the environmental document, and that we can make sure that all of our studies will cover those areas of concern. It's going to be very similar to a scoping meeting, but not nearly as formal as a scoping meeting, because all the indications that we've received from Caltrans so far is that they don't feel like the environmental issues that we've identified so far rise to the level of an EIR or an environmental assessment. So far, we're proposing a mitigated negative declaration. And so there's not a formal scoping that's involved okay. with that process.
So, let's see if we have any more questions from council, and I'll turn it to no, I'll jump to you this time. I think we started with John last time, and then we'll start. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Just to confirm then, at the conclusion of task one is when the decision would be made about which alternative is going to be designed and eventually implemented and pursued through the permitting process. Is that
correct? That's right. We've asked the project team to consider two potential build alternatives, the signal as well as the roundabout.
Okay, and so during that, this next year, task one, we would be, there would be a public workshop as described in the contract, and then eventually a presentation of the pros and cons of both options and decision. It sounds like quite a bit of Caltrans authority on that decision, but the council and the community will have an opportunity to sound off on that, and then ultimately going through the permit process, quite a bit of oversight there as well. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. You know, Caltrans is well versed in public outreach. They welcome it, and they expect it, and so we're ready and raring to go.
All right. For any sort of hearings, what do you intend for public notification? I know some people in the neighborhood have said they're really concerned about this and want to be notified, but then you mentioned the high school and the families involved in the high school, and that could extend all the way over to Los Osos potentially. So how do you – it's fairly complicated in trying to get as many people as possible to – be able to provide input if they want to. How do you think we'll be best successful at that?
Well, certainly we're going to start off working with Scott Graham and our community development department, and we'll use the normal procedures for outreach to the community to reach out within a particular radius. But as you mentioned, we're going to have folks that utilize that intersection or impacted from Los Osos to Cayucas. And so I think outreach through the high school would be the best way for us to approach that.
I also expect that since this is community-wide significance, that we wouldn't rely on probably the standard radius mailings, that we'd use the alternative process, the display ads in the paper, so we can reach out to the entire community because it is a far-reaching project. Now, we have to notice the folks that reside or own property within a certain radius, but I don't think we can rely just on that. I think we have to do further outreach through the display ad process, where you put an ad in the paper and notice the meeting that way, so you can, because it will affect the entire community.
Yeah. Thanks for making that point. And that was my last question at this point.
John?
Good. Thank you for the overview and presentation. Rick, is there a performance clause that sometimes, well, I guess this is managed by Caltrans, so it really may be a moot point, but for accelerated performance and bonus in terms of cost reduction, is that?
No, there is not.
So that's not. Okay. Thanks.
Christine?
No, thanks for getting to the core of my questions. Now that I don't have any additional at this time. Thanks.
Okay. I just want to cover one as far as outreach. We've had comments about using our water bills as ways to reach out to folks and do that. You know, maybe we could do the same with Cayucas and Los Osos. You know, I know that seems like maybe a stretch, but I'm just throwing that out there. I think we've covered a lot of grounds as far as task one, and it's going to determine the project. Just want to make sure that, you know, task one, and we're talking about outreach, but those the outreach portion of that, you know, I imagine we're going to have some, we're going to be using our Public Works Advisory Board for that outreach and that type of facilitating and meeting.
I think Public Works Advisory Board plus our Planning Commission, because as the responsible agency through the CEQA process, we'll want to see the Planning Commission weigh into the process. Also on the environmental documents. We do have a couple more slides to get through. Maybe Rick can breeze through them to maybe fully describe a few other features that to help this along a little bit, and then we can continue with questions.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. The slide that you see before you right now is just kind of an overview of the layout as it currently exists for the roundabout alternative. One of the modifications that we made to the scope of work with the consultant as we moved through this process was to include some visual simulation, because we see that there will probably be at least two additional retaining walls that will be a part of the two ramps that you see to the north and to the south, joining to Highway 1. Those retaining walls will provide an additional canvas, if you will, to the local volunteers here in the community who've already expressed an interest in putting up some public art displays on the existing overpass. So we want the public to get a real concept for what that could look like and the changes that they potentially will see with this alternative. We also heard throughout our review process during the step one and the step two and feedback that we got it from PWAB was, what's the impact going to be on the southbound ramps over by the high school? And will this improved flow of traffic through Main Street reduce the gaps and make it untenable for that traffic? And so we've asked for additional modeling to be done during the process as well to address those gaps and will they still be adequate for folks to get off those ramps. There are still a couple of issues that are going to be carried over from the step two process that will need to be resolved. They pertain to the truck turning movements that will occur here. The roundabout as it's configured right now will accommodate all those truck turning movements, but in order to take a truck off of the ramp and have that truck go southbound on Main Street, the truck will be required to traverse the roundabout rather than to make the U-turn. And so that will require some unique signage that will be addressed. We've also changed the location of those ramps and how they join the roundabout itself because of stopping site distance issues that come into play because of the existing location of the abutments on the Highway 1 bridge. We've addressed most of those concerns right now, but there are still a couple of speed issues that we need to make sure are addressed, and that will require some additional modeling that we will be part of this preliminary engineering of task number one. Just a quick overview of where we are with funding. We have more than enough funding in place already to accommodate task number one. But if the costs hold true to the current estimate for task number two, It will require additional city matching funds, but that's an issue that won't come up until the next fiscal year. And we'll keep you informed as we move through this process on what those requirements will be. Also unresolved is some of the construction funding, and while these are very preliminary numbers, I wanted to give you a sense of what the difference might be currently between the two different alternatives in terms of the city share of the construction funding. And so the first column of numbers that you see is the projected construction costs on the signal alternative. The second column of numbers is the roundabout alternative. So you can see from the two red numbers that there's about a $215,000 difference in cost to the city to build the roundabout over the signal. We think because of the improved operational characteristics for the additional life of the project that additional cost is well worthwhile.
Excuse me, Mr. Sauer, can you go back to that slide? And the top line there, 50% funded by fiscal year 16 RTIP, Regional Transportation Improvement Plan?
That's correct.
Okay, which is part of the SLOCOG.
It is.
Okay.
And it's federal funding. It's proposed to be funded through the CMANC, which is the air quality funding. So it really has to have an air quality benefit. It's going to be difficult to make the justification due to the increased idling times at a signal that we're going to have a air quality benefit with signalization.
I guess I just want to highlight that for people that are looking at that. What's RTIP? Just want to just touch bases on that.
Yeah, that's
Regional Transportation Improvement Plan.
Yep.
Sorry for the acronyms.
Yep. Yeah.
You bet. And then also you'll note here that SLOCOG has designated this as one of their self-help initiative projects, and that's where the additional $1 million of allocation is coming from.
So just to speak to the self-help initiative, that's not necessarily – so the self-help tax initiative is on the ballot. Are you referring to that part of it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So should this pass, we're looking at perhaps additional support from the regional portion of that county tax fund.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I also just add that we're not getting ahead of ourselves, but at all. This is important and good, but it's going to be year more before we're in the phase of funding. So there's other things we're going to know over that period of time. And, for example, if there were a significant investment in the city, perhaps at the power plant in that time, and that the power plant were to be redeveloped, there would be an increase in traffic or something, then those things can be discussed with developers if there are funding needs for a project like this.
Okay. I would just quickly refer to the project milestones. This is an old schedule, as you can see. It shows that we're significantly behind right now in terms of where we had hoped to be in the process of the PA NED. The revised schedule that we've gotten with the proposal shows us catching up between task number one and task number two and still ending up where we need to be at the end of fiscal year 18-19 with a project ready to list, because we feel like that's a real key milestone from Caltrans's perspective, and there may be some funding opportunity if we hit that window. And with that, I'd just throw it back to you for more questions.
Great. We don't have any public comment slips on this. I'm looking to the audience. I'll open up for public comment since I'm seeing hands but no speaker slips. Public comments open. Please come on forward.
Sorry, I didn't bring a speaker comment. My name is Robert Davis. I wanted to make a statement and then ask a question. It's my understanding from the financial plan of Measure J that if the measure does not pass, we won't have that $1 million that we need to construct any kind of project at this intersection. So that would be a reason for us to promote passage of Measure J. My question, though, was on the signalized alternative. There's a question mark for Caltrans Minor A funds. And I wondered if there's some follow-up for that. So, thank you.
Yeah, I would just clarify that Caltrans has expressed an interest in the roundabout. They see it as a strong improvement that will last much longer and address the traffic more thoroughly than the signal. Mm-hmm. They see signalization with the close proximity of those existing ramps to Main Street as being problematic. And so while there are no commitments from Caltrans about minor A funds because they're allocated on a year-to-year basis on the authority of the district engineer, we feel like there would be more support for minor A funding for the roundabout than there would be for a signal.
Okay. And I guess that leads to another question.
So I just want to be clear that we're on public comment and not getting into dialogue here, if you don't mind. I just said to keep it going. Thank you. Sorry about that. Didn't want to. Thanks. Were there any more public comment? Okay. Anybody else? Christine, you want to lead us off in questions?
Sure. You know, I think a quick question that doesn't have to do with anything we've talked about yet, but in terms of having a plan in place ready for implementation, I guess talk to me a little bit about if we have a problem intersection that we've identified that I think everyone agrees is a problem intersection. So the city and Caltrans, as our partner, are moving forward to try to find remediate the situation. So that's where we are tonight. Okay. If whether or not Measure J passes or the city has the matching funds, is it important to have some kind of a plan in place so that if federal funds or state funds or Caltrans funds open up, then we have basically a shovel-ready plan? Can you talk to me about whether or not the funding comes forward in the next year or 6 months or year and 6 months? Isn't there a benefit to having something ready to go?
That's exactly true. There are many projects that wait for funding. So you deliver the project design and continue to seek the funding to become available. Because if you wait to do the design till you have all the funding lined up, you'll never build a project. It just can't move forward. I think one local city is a prime example of that. The city of Paso Robles, they've front-loaded a bunch of design projects that they may not have enough funding, regional funding to build, but they're waiting for some other city to fail. To be harsh about it, this happens all the time on a regional basis. It happened with our bridge project. Bob Jones Trail wasn't ready to move forward. We had a design ready to move forward. We got the funding that was going to go to Bob Jones Trail for our bridge project because we were shovel ready and ready to go. We had our environmental document done and our design complete.
I would just also point out that the current reallocated CDBG funds that we received in the amount of $236,000 was simply because we had demonstrated an ability to obligate funds in our earlier projects and we were ready to move out and somebody else wasn't.
Thanks for clarifying that. I think those are things that you all know internally that the public isn't necessarily always aware of, that, you know, funding the projects is critically important. And, you know, you're laying out some time tonight, and it lays out a little bit of how the funding might happen. But certainly it's the plan. You can't get any funding if you don't have a plan that's ready to go. So thanks for confirming that. You know, I think all of the questions that I had were answered, and I'm ready to go to discussion if anyone else is. And I guess I could start unless there are further questions.
Great. Any other questions? Ready to go to discussion? You want to leave us on in discussion?
Thanks. Sure. Okay. So I think that as with all engineering-centric reports, this one definitely crosses over the line from the engineering. It has to be engineered properly. We're talking about people in vehicles moving toward people on bicycles and people pedestrians. So it's necessary to have the expertise that both of you, Mr. Levick and Mr. Sauerwein, bring to the process tonight and to create a document that you've created and follow along in this process. It does rely heavily on your engineering expertise and your ability to know how projects work in addition. So I appreciate taking the time tonight to set out exactly where we are in the process. So I don't necessarily know if it's just a crazy time of year, but it seems like some of the comments I have received on this, they're just either that's confusion, which is fine, we do need to clear that up, or it's confusion on purpose, I'm not sure. But certainly we are at the proper step in the process to begin to then go to our community and get more input from them on the options at this intersection. So I think you've made it really clear exactly where we are in the process and what we were intending to do tonight. I also appreciate then I'll move through. So you've clarified the process we've had in the past. You numbered how many PWAB opportunities there have been for our PWAB appointed folks to weigh in, for that to be replayed over on all of our different media outlets, and then how the council updates we've had, the goal setting where we discuss this again, and then also budgeting for the process that we're going through, not budgeting for a roundabout, let me clarify, but budgeting for the process to decide how to improve one of the worst intersections in the county, I might add. Tonight, you've explained the steps moving forward to clarify exactly where we are in the process. Again, that is, I'm repeating that, but it's really clear that there was some confusion in the community about exactly where we are in the process, and we do not want to let that hang out there, but we want to definitely clarify. You've clearly laid out the future for public input opportunities. It looks like they're going to be coming down the pike soon, so folks should probably sign up and get involved in this process if they're not already receiving email updates. They can directly email a council or directly email either one of you to say they want to be involved every single step in the way. I appreciate the fact that we can learn from other outreach we've done that maybe wasn't as robust as we had hoped. So I think we've learned a lot about that in the last, certainly my time on council, I've learned a lot about what it takes to get a lot of input. And we can succeed in doing it. And I think setting out an APB about it would be what I would expect that we will do and try to encompass everyone involved. Clearly, you talked about the financial concern that I did hear from several PWAB members. If it's the most, how can we ever afford it? So you talked about future city matches. We talked about being ready with the project for grant funds as they come forward. And you talked about advocating at Caltrans, which the city has a seat on that board to advocate for funds coming our direction. So I think those are four points that I wanted to specifically mention. So I took some notes prior to speaking based on the conversations we've had tonight. So it's a little more stilted than I normally do. But I think it's a large, frightening, scary project to some people. I think to other people who have lived in communities or experienced roundabouts, including the one we have in our own community, I think a lot of people are actually somewhat excited about it. I'm not going to say no one's emailed me and said they're excited. That's mostly in verbal conversations. But the idea that we will at least be addressing the problem we have and that we're taking it seriously and that we're able to work with Caltrans to sort it out, I think it's I'm pleased to see it. I'm glad there's plenty of time for folks to interact with us and with staff and with Caltrans. And I'm sure everyone else is going to say this after me, but let's just keep on top of that public outreach, because the greatest project in the world, if it's perceived that the city's shoving it in and not letting people know about it, it won't be supported. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to address a critical need at that intersection, and I look forward to the process being robust and including everyone in order to get the right project. So in that way, moving forward tonight, knowing what we need to do, which is move forward this consultant agreement and getting involved in the environmental evaluation, I see no reason not. I'm strongly supporting that tonight. Thanks.
Great. Christine, thank you. John?
Thank you, Christine, for that great summary. I will just add to that. I won't repeat that. In response to some of the public comment and then the emails that we've received and then the personal contact that I've received, let me start with public comment. I'm concerned about anecdotes that float around that are not based upon truth and fact. And I very much appreciate tonight the clarity with which you have outlined the previous process to date, and also the clarity with which you have outlined the future, and that it will be extremely inclusive of community input. And that will be broad in terms of outreach, and there will be multiple opportunities, as I think we always try to do, for significant input, even with Caltrans in charge, because that's their philosophy from what you've said, and I appreciate that. And just want to, again, respond to the issues raised publicly, that the rationale for this is the fact that, and I guess I will repeat one thing that you said, that this is one of the worst intersections on the planet. I guess I was a little more forceful than you were. And it needs to be addressed. And timing is of the essence. And I'm getting that tonight. And I appreciate the fact that you stated that we can actually potentially meet the initial project timeline if we move this forward and get going. And so I think this satisfies all of the needs that have been conveyed. It also addresses the prevalence of anecdotes not based on fact and truth that continue to bother me when I hear them. And I believe we've flushed those out tonight. And I thank you for that. And I certainly support moving forward with the process you've outlined. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Noah.
Yes, thank you. And I do want to just appreciate the work that you guys did and outreach to other potential companies that respond to the RFP. That is always kind of an odd situation when you have a very significant project in hand there and to only get that one response. It would have been concerning to me if you hadn't have done that great legwork in following up and reaching out to those other companies that are qualified and getting that really direct response from them. And I feel confident that we have the right firm for the job here because of that. So I want to thank you for that. Also, just it's not a big deal, but that you mentioned the public art component to this, which would come further down the road. And I just appreciate that. I know Caltrans has a program to help facilitate that, and I think that would be a nice component that I know the Citizens Beautification and Heritage Committee and the Art Center have expressed interest in helping at some point when we're there. So thanks for continuing and keeping that alive. Personally, I may be the only one who's actually been run over in that intersection on my motorcycle with my wife, and thankfully we both walked away, but I would say that from my experience, this intersection is in dire need of improvements, and I'm glad that we're working on it. And I'm probably not the only one that's been run over there. I would say I'm definitely not the only one that's been run over there. And in saying that, I do think it's going to be really important for us to engage with the community and really think long and hard about how this project, however it turns out, will affect mostly the pedestrian component, knowing the high school being there. And I think we've all picked up on that, and we all will look at that really closely as going forward. And it's a challenging project. I think there are probably others that Caltrans and other communities have wrestled with that are maybe more challenging or bring in another element beyond this, but it's hard to think of other things that could make this more complicated. So we have a project in front of us, and that's why an environmental process that helps look at different alternatives and present those to the community is going to be really important. And I think the Public Works Advisory Board did a great job talking this through and identifying some different nuances that hadn't been raised before. So fully agree with their recommendations and the comments before me.
Great. No, thanks. I just want to start off with the Public Works Advisory Board, actually back up to our goals update while we're congratulating our staff for doing all their work as far as where we're progressing on our goals. We need to recognize our advisory boards because they're doing a lot of that work as well. So this is an opportunity to do that. I know everyone on council feels the same way, and I just want to roll that into my comments that you started off with, Noah, as far as the Public Works Advisory Board having this discussion. Marlis McPherson, the chair, was here, spoke early about it, and ensuring that, hey, we want to make sure that, you know, phase one's done and we're looking at both alternatives. So that was great input. The staff report and the process in which we're moving forward is adhering to that recommendation. So that's great. I think it's just, we're listening to what is coming from our advisory boards and what's coming through the community. So just want to say that. I think we all want to touch on this particular intersection. Great to see it moving forward. I know we talked about we have to be moving a project forward, even though we may not have it fully funded at this point. We've seen, and I'm glad that we had that discussion, the comments, and Rob, you spoke to that. We've seen the projects in the city, tangible projects, succeed, even going into it knowing that it wasn't fully funded per se. And whether it's good planning, good work up front. And so I'm supportive of the way this was presented to us, specifically the task one, and making sure we're looking at all the alternatives, ensuring that we're doing the outreach. I will say that as a SLOCOG board member, I'm pleased that we have good partners in Caltrans. So I think we will be working closely with them. Rick, I know you spoke about your associate that works for Caltrans as well. Just our experience with Caltrans, we do have good partners within the region, so you feel comfortable with that. So I don't think I have any more comments other than I would take a motion at this time, unless there's any other comments.
So I would move that council authorizes the award of a consultant agreement for preliminary engineering services for project 05-5391R, State Route 1 Main Street at State Route 41 Interchange Improvements.
As amended.
Did we amend?
Sorry.
We made some amendments to the contract that were presented tonight, so with amendments to the contract.
Oh, and you know what? May I try it?
Yeah, they are actually included in the recommendations as they were originally presented. So we'd also like you to authorize the Public Works Director to execute an agreement.
Right. That's what I didn't read. I read the one before. Should I just start again?
Sure, that'd be great.
So we'll scratch that. And then I will move that we receive the report as amended. Does that feel better? I don't need to say that.
Receive the report and presentation.
Review recommendations. We reviewed the recommendations from the Public Works Advisory Board and authorize the Public Works Director to execute an agreement for preliminary engineering services for project 05-5391R.
And?
Oh, I'm sorry, you guys.
It's late.
No. All right. Oh, sorry. I'm not reading. I don't have paper. In the amount of, so just start there. Mm-hmm. In the amount of $260,213, including a 10% contingency, in the amount of $23,656.
We have a motion.
Painful, but finished.
Painfully seconded.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Johnson. Great job. A second by Councilmember Heading. And any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. Thanks for that. Thanks for all the work. And that concludes item C4, and we're moving on to declaration of future agenda items. Are there any future agenda items?
This is a request to have staff bring back discussion and consideration of amendments to the current zoning code to allow for chickens and potentially other urban agricultural practices. It's been brought to our attention that similar to some of the things we've seen within RV and boat storage, there are some restrictive components to the code that, for example, do not allow for people to have chickens, a small chicken flock in a residential zone. It's somewhat confusing because one section of the code that I've operated under, I'm not going to get too much detail on this, but one section of the code you read and it seems to allow, for example, chickens, and another section of the code basically makes that first section obsolete. So request staff to bring back for consideration some adjustments to that, or at least a process similar to what we're doing with the RV and boats, where we take some more time and update that code through the general plan, the local coastal plan, or that component of the code, or look at options for that. And the idea would be if staff, I haven't heard about any others that have emerged since we started this process, but if staff had seen some other things that they thought might be worth us looking at or considering to make sure that we do include in the general plan and local coastal plan update and the zoning code update, that they we'd give them the authorization to bring back those as well. I don't think there are any from talking with Mr. Graham, but the urban agricultural one is one that I think would be good for us to talk about.
Any other comments?
Oh, I would support it based on information that had come to light for me through a resident conversation and then talking to Mr. Graham as well about where we stand with. We're not talking about someone chicken farming here. We're talking about somebody who has two or three layers, no roosters, and a way to just ensure that we're not moving forward in a way that is causing undue concern without full review, much as we've experienced in some of the other hedges, RVs, boats. So I would support it because okay. We'll see what the staff report is. That's
so basically this is just a discussion on how we want to move forward on this.
Mm-hmm. Specific to urban agriculture.
In general, then. Yeah. Broader than just chickens. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
good. Yeah, I would support
okay,
that.
Okay, then, that would be to a date that we could, there's no determined date on that. We can work that out with a schedule. I just want to make sure, I think we've been very diligent about our scope of work and sticking with our goals and priorities. So looking at the workload, we can.
As long as I don't have to give up my cow, my milking cow, whatever.
Yeah, just the one cow?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if it makes you feel better, this is going to be a surprise to Mr. Graham or Mr. Yeah. Buckingham. It's information that's been shared with them that's come to light. So I think, and once in a while, we're going to have to be a little flexible once in a while.
Okay. So we have a request for a discussion for an amendment for chickens, agricultural. We've got support. We've got support. We've got four people supporting.
And we just like to refer to it as a brood of chickens, not a flock.
One question, maybe. For follow-up on the gentleman who had public comment about codes and alcohol facilities, sober living facilities. I wasn't clear on the follow-up for that and how we were going to.
My sense in looking at this with Mr. Graham is that our existing zoning ordinances are fully adequate to appropriately control that activity, and that's in fact why that activity is not going to happen where in the neighborhood that there was an indication that it might. So not trying to be unclear, but there was somebody that was intending to have a sober living boarding house in a particular neighborhood, and staff engaged with them, and that is not going to happen because our ordinances are very clear and don't allow that.
I guess he referred to levels of care and appropriate licensure and qualified staff. And I
heard Mr. Brant and Graham say that there's state requirements on that, so that covers that.
There are, exactly.
Yeah. And so, yeah. Okay. Okay. All good? Okay. Good. Fly. Ready to fly the coop. That was a good one. Okay, our next regular meeting will be held on Tuesday, September 13, 2016 at 6 p.m. right here at the Vets Hall. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.